Medinde Ojirapo Kwesi Radnehem Pata Akan Ojirapo Akwamumine Amarukai Tifi Mu. That means greetings. My name is Ojirapo Kwesi Radnehem Pata Akan of the Akwamumine Amarukai Tifi Mu, the Akwamu Nation in North America. Today is Ojira Da, which is Ojira Day. Ojira means purification. And this is our live broadcast for Ojira for Purification, where we deal with Nanasom, Afurakani, Afuraikaitni, ancestral religion, and the Ojira, which is purification, operationalizes Nanasom. So we talk about Amambre, ancestral culture, Nanasom, ancestral religion, as the two points that support a triangular apex of structure, which at the apex is Ama Ancestu, or nation building. We opened up the chat, so people in the chat, send me a message right quick just so you can let me know that you can hear me clearly. We're coming through clear, and I see we have callers on the line already. In the meantime, you can check out the we're going to be dealing with the Maranichi, divine law, love, and divine hate. So you can pull up that document. If you don't already have it up, you can pull up the download, Maranichi, on the ojirapo.com website. Okay, and I just want to send out a couple of messages. Okay, you can hear me, cool. If you have any questions regarding the Maranichi, you can post them in the chat now and just throughout the broadcast, and we will be taking calls as well. And what I want to do is send out a message right quick before we get started, just to remind people, and then we'll get moving. In the meantime, for those who are on the call in the chat right now, our first presentation for the summer begin it's this Akwesi Da, this Sunday, June 22nd at 12 p.m. in Camp Springs, Maryland. We will be doing our first presentation for this summer on Nanasom, Afurakani, Afuraikaitni, ancestral religion, and the various publications that we have produced dealing with various aspects of this subject. So we have about 12 books, about 60 research articles, about 48 videos dealing with various aspects of ancestral religion, culture, and nation building. So we will be speaking on that specifically with regard to Nanasom, Afurakani, Afuraikaitni, or African ancestral religion as it relates to Afurakani, Afuraikaitni people in America, our own expression of ancestral religion, which we have inherited through our blood circles throughout the Musuo Kessie, the great perversity, the enslavement period, our traditions that we have preserved that are within our blood circles for us to retrieve. We have our own traditions. We are not dependent upon anybody outside of our own direct blood ancestresses and ancestors to restore our ancestral religion. And until we do that, we will constantly be engaged in disordered, self-destructive thoughts, intentions, and actions, behavior. This is why we're getting into the Maranichi, divine law and divine hate, today, because divine law and divine hate are the two poles, expansive and contractive poles of divine order. If you don't understand the divinity of law, which is the same word as love, you don't understand the divinity of hate, then you don't understand the two complementary halves of divine order. So we're going to get into that today. So we will be, and that's what we will, of course, be talking about on June 22nd in Camp Springs, Maryland. Look on the website, ojirafo.com, O-D-W-I-R-A-F, as in freedom, O.com. Go to our website, O-D-W-I-R-A-F-O.com, ojirafo.com. On the index page, you'll find our various publications, links, and so forth. You'll also find information about our upcoming presentation. We have this show every Benada, Abinada Tuesday, the Ojira broadcast, and then on Awukuda or Akuada Wednesdays, we have the Egua Marketplace broadcast where we highlight individuals and organizations in the Apurakani Apurakaitini, or African community, the Apurakani Apurakaitini community, where their businesses, organizations, products, and services are benefiting the Apurakani Apurakaitini community, and they also share authentic Apurakani Apurakaitini value. So we will be having Anam Makesi Tahuti, publisher of African World Analysis, publisher and author of How to Make a Negro Christian, how we will, the text goes into detail about how Christianity was forced on us during the end of the enslavement period and afterwards, and how they indoctrinated us with that foolishness, and just a number of different things. He also has a show, Africa's Reascension, on Blog Talk Radio on Akwesi Dao Sunday nights at 9 p.m. So we will be dialoguing with the brother tomorrow at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So June 22nd, Camp Springs, Maryland, we'll have the presentation on Nanasong. July 5th, in Hartford, Connecticut, we will be in Hartford, Connecticut, presenting on Nanasong as well. At each presentation, we will have the soft cover versions of our publications available. One of the texts, we will be giving out a free copy, which we have done at various presentations that we've had over the past number of months. We've given away about 300 books to date since this past September, and we will be giving away a free copy of one of our texts at the presentation. The other six publications will be available for sale, and then, of course, they're available for sale on our website. All of the PDF versions of our books, all of the 12 books, as well as the 60-plus research articles, as well as the videos, all of those are free downloads. So you can download the books for free, PDF, but if you wanted the soft cover version, we do sell the soft cover versions of 7 of the texts so far. We have more forthcoming. So we just wanted to give that information. Now, we will be in some more locations this summer. Check the website on a daily basis, because we will be confirming dates. We have a number of different individuals who have asked us to come to different areas, and we're working on different things. Right now, what is confirmed is Camp Springs, Maryland, this Akwesi Dao this Sunday, and Hartford, Connecticut on July 5th. We were looking at Las Vegas, Nevada. We're trying to firm that up by the end of this week, and we will be letting you know the date for that. And then we have some other cities coming up. If you want us to come out to your region, just hit us up. Go to our website, odirafo.com, O-D-W-I-R-A-F as in freedom, O.com. Hit us up on the Contact Us section, as well as the Guamukasa page, the public speaking page, and we can organize that. Let me check to see if everybody... Okay, let's get into the text. Maranechi, Divine Law and Divine Hate. Again, starting off with the term divine order. So in the Akan language, the name of the Great Father, the Supreme Being, male, Nyame. The Great Mother is Nyamewa. That's the Great Mother and the Great Father. Nyame comes from Amen, which is Amen, or Amen from ancient Kemet. Nyamewa comes from Amena, or Amenet, from ancient Kemet. The most ancient names of the Supreme Being, the Great Mother, and the Great Father is Amenet and Amen, which in Akan is Nyamewa and Nyame. From the earliest composition, the earliest written composition that have been unearthed to date, which are the Meru texts or the pyramid texts of ancient Kemet, you will find Amen and Amenet together, the Great Father and the Great Mother together. So from the very beginning, there's always been a mother and the father. There's never been a time when there was just a male divinity. That's foolishness, that's cissexual, homosexual nonsense coming from the white male spring. There's never been a time when there was just the great mother. That's foolishness, that's dissexual, homosexual nonsense coming from the whites and their offspring. Some of us have been caught up in white patriarchy, nonsense, foolish pseudo-religious concepts, and some of us have been caught up in a pseudo-white lesbian matriarchy, which is pseudo-religious nonsense. Stop aping the whites and their offspring. Amen and Aminet have been together from the beginning. Not only can you find a textual reference for that, but you can also find experientially when you attune to Amen, Aminet, Nyame, Nyamewa, or Lisa and Mawu, or Komosu and Chukwu, as they call them in the Igbo tradition, all across the continent of Afuraka, Afurakai, and wherever we have migrated around the world, we understand the Great Mother and the Great Father are two halves of a whole, complementary opposites, not conflictual opposites, complementary opposites. Nyamewa, Nyame, the Great Mother and Great Father, the term for arrangement or order in the Akan language is Nsheshe. The verb she, she means to fix, to arrange, to order. The noun nsheshe means that which is arranged, ordered, fixed. That's order. Nyamewa, nyame, nsheshe is the great mother and the great father's nsheshe, or arrangement, or order. It's the divine order. The term nsheshe, meaning order, or plan, or arrangement, comes from seshe in ancient Kemet, which means plan, order, or arrangement. It is the same term from ancient Kemet and Kanit, which is a term from ancient Nubia, carried over by our Akan ancestresses and ancestors who migrated from the ancient Kanat or the Kanit land, which is a title for Nubia, migrated west after the fall of ancient Kemet, reestablished civilization in the ancient empire of Kanat and named it Kanat, just like Kanat, meaning Nubia, or the Kanit land, Nubia. We migrated west and reestablished ancient Kanat, the empire of Kanat, which became known as the empire of Ghana, or Ghana. After Muslim invasions, we migrated from that region down towards the savannah and into the forest belt region and reestablished once again Akana civilization, or Akan civilization. And some of us were taken from that region, which is today's Ghana and Ivory Coast. And during the Musuoketsi, the great perversity enslavement era, we were taken into North Central South America and the Caribbean and Europe. And there are, just like there are millions of Akan people on the continent, about 20 million total, one of the largest groups. You have millions who are in North Central South America, the Caribbean, and Europe as a result of the Musuoketsi, the great perversity enslavement era, so we still have the culture that we carried within our kra nemoja, our soul and blood. So it manifests, for example, in North America as hoodoo and various other forms. That's how we preserve the tradition. Other groups also preserve their traditions in North America as well. Yoruba people preserve their tradition under the form of juju, as it's called commonly in North America. People who are Fon and Ewe retain their traditions under the form of voodoo or New Orleans voodoo, but voodoo across the southern United States, southeastern United States. Of course, the Congo-speaking people, Kikongo, Bakongo people, people from Angola, central parts of Afuraka, Afurakai, retain their traditions as well as the Igbo in the Gullah Geechee tradition. So we maintained our culture, many of us even language as well, but specifically culture, communication with the ancestresses and ancestors of our blood circles, communication, possession with the ancestors, with the deities, the forces of nature, spirit possession, communication, learning medicine from the earth mother, from the deities that operate through nature, spirit possession and so forth, divination. We retained all of that within our blood circles. Same as people in the Caribbean, our people in South America, in North America, we did the same thing. So the language is consistent from ancient Kanat, ancient Kanit, Nubia, across to West Afuraka, Afurakai, Central, and into the Western Hemisphere. So you will find that this is why we have Amenet, Amen, Sesher, the divine plan, Nyamewa, Nyame, and Sheshe, the divine plan in Yakan tradition. Divine order is comprised of two poles, an expansive pole and a contractive pole. Expansion and contraction is like breathing. The expansive pole of order is divine law. The contractive pole of order is divine hate. So you have law and hate, expansion and contraction. It's just no different than your circulatory system and your immune system. Your circulatory system, you take in nutrients, you take in things when you eat, you take in things when you breathe, it gets into your bloodstream, and your bloodstream carries the nutrients and everything throughout your system. That's expansive. It takes in nutrients and spreads them throughout the system. That's expansive. However, you need an immune system, which includes the lymphatic system, to take the toxins and any other things, free radicals and other things that develop or cancer cells that develop, so they can be isolated, so they can be destroyed, and so they can be expelled from the body to maintain the integrity of the organism. So that is contractive. So you have expansion and contraction. You have an expansive pole of order, which is law, which is the same word as love. You have the contractive pole of order, which is hate. Through divine law, you express order. Law is the expression of order. Hate is the impression of order. So through law, you express order. As we use the example, if you want to put something in alphabetical order, what are the laws that govern alphabetical order? The laws are the expression of the order you are trying to achieve. So if somebody has some letters and they said, put these in alphabetical order, there's a specific order. So how do you get to that order? You learn the laws that express that order. B comes after A, C comes after B, D comes after C, and so forth. So when you understand those laws, you can put those letters in order. The laws express the order. The law is the expression of order. Hate is the impression of order. Through hate, you impress or you imprint upon the created order and upon your circumstances the parameters within which you are to operate. Your immune system is the vehicle of the divine hate of the Supreme Being. It imprints or impresses upon your system the parameters within which your system must operate. If something happens outside of those parameters, those cells that become disfigured and start operating outside the parameters that have been established through the law that governs your makeup, then your immune system, inclusive of the lymphatic system, impresses or imprints the order. It stamps out the disorder. So without the immune system, you don't have any other systems that are functional. You can have all the other systems of your body, respiratory, diffuse neuroendocrine system, integumentary system, respiratory system, digestive, excretory, all of them. But if your immune system is not functioning properly, then all of the other systems will collapse. To not deal with hate, which is rejection of this order for the purpose of maintaining the divine order, the integrity of divine order, is to take your immune system and your immunity away from you. So we're going to get into the etymology of the terms, because the whites and their offspring teach us that hate is wrong, hate is evil, hate represents a low vibration of energy, hate is immature, that is pure foolishness. Only slaves believe that hate is evil. Hate is divine. They are deities, gods and goddesses of hate, just like there are gods and goddesses of law and gods and goddesses of sensuality. The male and female force of divine law is Ma'al, which is the male, and Ma'at, which is the female. These are forces in nature that we invoke, that we communicate with, who possess during ritual, who communicate with us via divination and various other means. The male and female forces of divine hate are Heru Bedeti and Sechima or Sekhmet. They are called Benna and Abena in the Akan tradition. They are called Ogun and Iyami Abeni in the Yoruba tradition. So these are the male and female forces of divine hate. in an ancient Kemet, we can show, and we show in the text, in our book, that the term hate is actually in the descriptive title of the names of these divinities. So hate is one half of divine order. If you don't understand that, you don't understand divine order. So, of course, the whites and their offspring will teach you that hate is evil, because if you embrace the reality of divine order, you must embrace divine hate, meaning you must embrace the forces in creation that will isolate, destroy, and expel individuals and entities who promote disorder so that the divine order can be maintained. Just like your immune system destroys cancerous cells, you may have had some liver cells that were normal. In general, most people have about 1 out of every 100,000 cells in their body becomes cancerous and is cancerous at any given time. However, because you have an immune system, those cancerous cells are constantly being destroyed. They're being killed. They used to be normal, but then they became disfigured and began to malfunction, seeking to consume and destroy all the other healthy cells. And if their development is not arrested, they would expand and proliferate and move throughout the body and destroy the whole organism. So the divine response for those individuals and entities who were once normal but became disfigured and began to consume and destroy every other entity in their path, the divine response is to isolate them, kill them, and expel them from the organism to maintain the integrity of the organism. That's the same within your body, it's the same within the black body of humanity. The first and only people created in the world, Afurakani, Afuraikaini people, meaning African people, black people. We are the only people created. We've been here for millions of years. We did not descend from apes or an ape-like ancestor. We have been here for millions of years as human beings. A few thousand years ago, a small percentage, less than 1 out of 100,000, becomes cancerous, just like less than 1 out of 100,000 cells in your body becomes cancerous. They become disfigured because of their misbehavior, because of their malfunctioning. So they become disfigured, and they no longer look like the other cells. Then they no longer function as the other cells. They begin to malfunction and seek to consume and destroy the healthy cells. So that small percentage of Afurakani, Afuraikaini people who are engaged in disorder separate from the larger group, are expelled from the larger group. Those engaged in dissexuality, homosexuality, rape, incest, murder, criminality, we've killed those individuals who are in the community creating that kind of perversity. Those who escaped that result, those were the ones who migrated up into northern Eurasia. Those are the ones who were drawn up into northern Eurasia. Those are the ones who got caught up in the ice age in northern Eurasia. And after a few thousand years, when the ice began to melt, they began to return to southern Europe and then into North Afuraka, Afuraika. They had lost their pigmentation at that point. Now, it wasn't only the diet and the climate that caused that. 1 out of every about 10,000 babies born in the black community is born albino, meaning they have two black parents. The child has white skin, blonde hair, light eyes. Externally, they're melanin recessive. They don't have any melanin. So they're pale. They can't deal with the sun. They spend too much time in the sun. They develop skin melanoma, skin cancer very easily. That can happen within one generation. People who have the autoimmune disease referred to as vitiligo, they can start losing their pigmentation. That can happen within a few years. So somebody can be chocolate brown and have white spots that develop all over their body and spread, and they lose their pigmentation. That's an autoimmune disease. Those kinds of things happen to people who are isolated in northern Eurasia. Not only the autoimmune disease, triggered by change in climate, triggered by a change in diet, triggered by a lack of sunlight, lack of vitamin D, all these various things, but then also their behavior. Incest greatly increases the incidence of albinism. Those who engage in incest, that go the birth rate or the incidence of albinism can go from 1 out of every 10,000 births being an albino to 1 out of every 100 births being an albino. So the incidence of albinism increases rapidly when people engage in incest, which is pervert. And then when those individuals also engage in incest, well, if you have albinos engaging in incestual relationships and reproducing children, now it's no longer that they only have the external melanin deficiency. Now the internal stores of melanin also become deficient and depleted and degenerate. And now you have an entity that's internally and externally melanin deficient. Now you have an individual who has never existed on Earth before, internally and externally. But it starts out spiritually with spiritual perversity, engaging in disorder. When you engage in disorder, you repel your kra, your soul, your divine consciousness, your okrawa, which we call in Akan. It's called ka and kaed and kemet, the okra and okrawa in Akan. When you engage in perverse behavior, you repel that force of nature that dwells within your head region, that divinity. If you continue to engage in that, that force will totally disconnect. Now you're a spirit without a divine anchor, without a soul, without a divine consciousness. Those who engage in rape, incest, dissexuality, perversity, they repel their kra, their okrawa, their ka, their kayat, their ori inu, their se, lido. And now you have spirits without souls. And once that ka leaves, then the melanin left right behind it. The spiritual degeneration precipitated the physical degeneration. So we go on that to show that there's a difference between non-Afurakani, non-Afurakaitni people, non-African individuals, and our people. That means white Europeans, white Americans, white Latinos, white Latinas, white Hispanics, white Hindus, white Arabs, white pseudo-Native Americans who are just Asians who migrated, white Asians, these individuals are all non-Afurakani, non-Afurakaitni people. They are spirits of disorder. That is how they incarnate. All of them who exist, all of them who have ever existed, all of them who ever will exist until they become extinct, until we make them extinct. They will never have a ka or kayat. They will always be spirits of disorder, just like a cancerous cell, once it becomes cancerous, is not returning to be a normal cell. So the divine response is extermination. Divine response. So let's deal with, so we get into that true story so we can show the difference between us. But let's get into the origins of the term. So you have the term divine law. We talked about ma'a and ma'at, the expansive and contractive aspects of the law function. So law itself is expansive. Hate is contractive. So the expansive pole of order is law. The same word as love, the contractive pole is hate. Within the expansive pole, of course, you have the male and female aspects of that pole, which is ma'a and ma'at. People have heard of ma'at, the divine force in nature, that force of law and balance. Our brother is the divinity called ma'a, divine force of law and balance on the male side. So we have to deal with both. We don't just read a few texts and start talking about Ma'at and put her on t-shirts and then that's it. The way we learn about these abosom, these divinities, these forces in nature, is to invoke them and communicate directly with them. They have shrines within our bodies that they resonate with. The reason they can possess during ritual song, ritual dance, libation, shrine work, and so forth, is because they have shrines within our bodies. Our organs and organ systems are the shrines of the divinities within our bodies. They have a center of resonance within us. So we can connect with them. We can contact them. They can connect with us. They can possess us. They can communicate with us. They can show themselves to us, and we can see them, and they can see us. Males, children, females, males, and so forth. So the way you learn about Ma'a and Ma'at is to invoke Ma'a and Ma'at. The way you learn about Herubehudet, Herakuti, you learn about Sechima, Sekhmet, is to invoke them through your ancestral tradition. So Ma'a and Ma'at is law. Now, if you look at the term, even if you look at the term in English, law and then the term love, the consonantal structure LV and LW, love and law. Now, if you look at the origin of the script itself, the whites and their offspring never created a script. They learned the phonetic script directly from our people, specifically from the people in Kanana, which is later called Canaan, later called Phoenicia. They call it the Phoenician script and so forth. They learned that script from our people who were living in that region. And they've been using, so the Roman script, Latin, Sanskrit, all these different scripts that the whites and their offspring use are just corruptions of the script that they learned from us. We learned, we had that script in ancient Kemet. We brought the scripts up, the more detailed, more complex Medutu hieroglyphic characters, as well as the shorthand hieratic and even shorthand demotic scripts, and we carried those with us wherever we migrated. People in Kanana, or so-called Canaan, Phoenicia, carried the scripts up from Apuraka Apuraikai with them into the region that would later be known as Palestine and so forth. We were, of course, in that area, migrating from Apuraka Apuraikai first. Now, the whites and their offspring learned that script from us. So when they're using all the letters of the so-called English alphabet, Latin alphabet, Arabic, Syriac, all of them, they come directly from a script, little corruptions of our script. So when you look at LV and LW, the V came first. A few hundred years later, the V evolved into the U. A few hundred years after that, about 1,000 years ago, the U evolved into the double U, which is two U's, double U. Two U's side by side. That's what a double U is. It's also written as two V's side by side. V, U, and W is the same letter. That's why in some European languages they pronounce V's and W's, they interchange. So some will say Sweden and they'll spell it with a W. Then some will pronounce it with a V and say Sweden and they'll use a V instead of a W because the V, U, and W all evolve from the same letter. Some will say William. That's how they pronounce William. Others will say Wilhelm because the V and the W interchange. So when you understand that the V and the W interchange, LV, love, and LW, love or law, is the same word and the same concept phonetically. Now, where does the concept come from? In ancient Kemet, the word for law is ma'a. Coptic, the late version of the language, the last dialectical version of the language, the term ma'a is often spelled meh. So ma'a is pronounced meh. The word love in ancient Kemet is pronounced mar or meh. In Coptic, it's also pronounced meh, like M-E. So the word for law, meh, is also the word for love, meh. Meh and meh, law and love. The same word phonetically, but then also conceptually. To be in law with a person is to be in love with a person or an entity. To be in love with an entity is to be in law. That means you're in harmony with divine order with respect to your interaction with that individual or entity. That's what being in love means. It means to be in law, to be in meh. Now, that's not an understanding that the whites and their offspring promote. What they're talking about, falling in and out of love, they're talking about falling in and out of lust. Lust is a misguided desire, a perverse desire. It's a perversion of law. It's not law or love, it's a perversion of that. Law places you in harmony with divine order. It is an expression of order. Lust is a perversion of that. It's a perversion of the expression. So there's a difference between somebody being in love, that means they're in law with an individual, entity, object, so and so forth. You're in law. You harmonize your thoughts, intentions, and actions with respect to divine order when you engage this individual or entity. If you're in lust, then you're having a misguided desire. There's a difference between law or love and then desire or sensuality. When you're talking about sensuality, the energy that's the magnetic energy that's the precursor to procreative activity and the replenishment of that of its harmony. Now you're talking about heteru. You're talking about amen men. Sometimes they're called men in Hathor, but men and heteru called amen men in Akan culture and amen meniwa in Akan culture. And heteru also has the title men menit as a wife of amen men in Kemet. And they're dealing with fertility, procreation, creativity, and so forth. But they're dealing with sensuality, you know, affection, and those kinds of things. That has to do with sensuality, that magnetism that has to do with the union of complementary opposites so that procreation can occur, so that production can occur, so that creativity, innovation, exploration can occur, all those different things in harmony with order. That's different than law. The whites and their offspring like to associate sensuality with divine law, quote-unquote love, and then they corrupt that into lust and then turn everything into a perverse enterprise. When you're talking about Ma'at and Ma'at, you're talking about the Yabosom, the male and female forces of law and love, which is the same concept. Ma'at or meh in Coptic, love and law. Now, when you deal with the term hate, they are male and female divinities of hate. The whites and their offspring teach that hate is evil. Hate is destructive. Hate represents a low vibration of energy. And then brainwash Negroes to embrace pseudo-religion, pseudo-spirituality, pseudo-New Age spirituality, and weave that nonsense into the Yoruba tradition, or weave that nonsense into the Akan tradition, or weave that nonsense into the Sangoma tradition, or weave that nonsense into Vodun, weave that nonsense into ancient Kemet. They're just repeating the perversity of the spirits of disorder who are totally out of harmony with divine law and divine hate. They're teaching foolishness. Now, hate is divine. It's one half of the created order of the universe. Now, if you look at the term hate, it comes directly from our language. It is not a European term. It will try to trace its etymological origins to the Proto-Indo-European root, hate coming from chet or aketos in Greek and chet or kat or chet in Proto-Indo-European like Tocharian A, meaning destruction, to destroy, to break and destroy. Where do they get the concept that chet or kit means to break or destroy, to hate, pain, misery, anguish, rejection, and so forth? It comes from the language of ancient Kemet, where you have the term chet and ket, or chet, which means to destroy, to break, to crush, to hate, to reject, to hit. And you will find that the Medutu and the determinative Medut, the symbols, the hieroglyphics, the determinative symbol of different versions of the term have a man standing with a stick, and he's attacking, beating, driving away, rejecting, destroying, engaged in violent activity. He's taking the stick and swinging it, hitting, hit, hate, heat with fire, with power, with heat, hitting, breaking, destroying, crushing, and so forth, demolishing, and all these different things. We have the Medutu, all of them in the appendix of the book. But the concept of Ket in Proto-Indo-European, Indo-European languages, the language family, meaning to destroy or to reject or to repel or to hate or to loathe or to reject and so forth, that whole concept comes directly from ancient Kemet with the exact same term, Ket or Ket, which means to break, destroy, reject, demolish, hate. And they show the actual individual in the process of engaging that force. So this is where they get it from. They have the definition, but they don't know where the definition comes from. They don't know that the medut of the person standing there engaged in the process of destroying or rejecting or repelling They don't know that it came from that. And then the cosmological infrastructure that gave birth to the symbol of the man doing that is born of Apenna and Bena, as they are called in our Akan tradition, Sechima, Sekhmet, which is also called that in Akan, Sechima, which is Sechima to Sekhmet in ancient Kemet. She's called Sechima in Akan, as well as Apenna in Akan. She's also called Behudat or Behudet, the female version in Kemet, which is where you get Apenna from. It is them, Bena and Apenna, Teru Behudet, Terakuti, Sechima, who are the forces in nature, expansive and contractive, male and female forces of divine hate in creation. And because the way they move through creation and they attack that which is out of order and destroy that which is out of order so they can maintain the integrity of the divine order, they are the enforcer and enforceress of divine order in creation. They are the divine immune system and lymphatic system in the great divine body of the Supreme Being. Just like you have an immune and lymphatic system in your body that destroys disorder to maintain the integrity of your system, there's a divine immune system force in creation that is Bena and Abena, that is Heru Behudet, that is Sechima, that is Ogun and Iyami Abeni. That's those two divinities. We communicate with them. They possess us during ritual. They show themselves at shrine. They show themselves through divination. They speak. They show themselves to the adults. They show themselves to children in the community, in various different traditions in North America, South America, the Caribbean, and as well as our people in Afuraka, Afuraka, and the various cultures under their various names. These are forces in nature that we deal with on a regular basis that are assigned to us when we incarnate into the world in pre-incarnation. So these are divinities of hate. We have the actual Medutu of their names and their descriptive titles. So you'll have Heru Keti, or Heru Keti, the Heru of divine hate. Heru Heri Imket, Heru the chief of hate, destruction. Divine destruction. You have Huit or Het Antiu, the hater or the punisheress of the Antiu. That is a title of Sechima, a title of Sekhmet. And the symbol again is the individual striking, hating, beating, rejecting. She's the hateress or the hatress, the divine hatress of the Antiu, which was a group of people in the eastern deserts outside of Kemet, who would sometimes invade Kemet. So Sekhmet would be as a lioness divinity, just like the lioness is guarding the perimeters of the nation, guarding the savanna, the grasslands. She's seen as a lioness divinity. She has the same force. That's her animal totem. That's her Archinebor, the lioness. And she's shown with the head of a lioness, but sometimes just as a lioness herself. And just like the lionesses patrol and hunt and attack the enemy, they would show Sechima as the divine hatress and the divine huntress of the Antiu, the ones who, the individuals called Antiu, who would invade from the eastern desert. And her name is Het, or Huit, Huit, sometimes H-U-I-T, Huit, or sometimes H-I-T, Het, or Het, the hate of the Antiu, the hater or hatress of the Antiu. This is part of her name. One of the titles of the winged sun disk, which is the form Heru Behudet very often takes, is Heti. Heti, which is rooted in hate, the destroyer of disorder. So we have all of the various Medutu that deal with that, the hieroglyphic symbols, words, and so forth. Now the term Het or Chet or Het can be found in Chet or Chi in Akan. And chi means to hate. It means to abhor. It means to loathe. It means to abominate. So when you hate something, you say chi, to hate. So one of the terms for, or the major term for taboo in our Akan culture is echi de or echiwadie, two different versions of the same term. Chi means to hate. Adie means things, objects, deeds, entities. So achite means things, objects, deeds, or entity, adie, that are chi, that are hated. atide or achiwadie are divine restrictions. It's translated as taboos in English. Atide or achiwadie are divinely proscribed behaviors, individuals, entities, and so forth. These are things, objects, deeds, or entities that the abosom hate, meaning chi. Nyame wa nyame, nyame chi, or the supreme beings hate. The supreme being hates, for example, child molestation. That's echiwadye, that's taboo, it's divinely hated. They will empower the people to kill the child molester because they hate child molestation. They hate murder. They hate rape. Murder is unjustified killing. There's killing that is justified, and then there's unjustified killing. Unjustified killing is taboo because it's murder. It's echiwadye. Rape is echiwadye. There are certain foods that can, if you eat the foods, they are poisonous to you and you will die. Echiwadye, or taboo to you, is divinely restricted. It's divinely prohibited. So echiwadye is something that's divinely hated, something that nyame wa nyame, the supreme being, hates, something that the abosom hate. Stealing is echiwadye. It is hated by the abosom. There are individuals who are hated by the abosom. So again, the term within the Akan tradition, chi, which means to hate, is also encased within the term echiwadye, meaning that which is divinely prohibited, divinely restricted, divinely hated, literally, by the supreme being, the forces in nature, and the ancestresses and ancestors who are honorable. That shows the divinity of hate. Any fool saying that hate is a lower vibration of energy, they learn that from the whites and their offspring. They are deities of hate, male and female. Without them, you would not have a created universe. You would not have a created order because the order would have already collapsed. They enforce the divine order in creation. So let's get to, if you look back, and we'll go to the last section. The book is five parts. If you look in the last section, and it starts off talking about, we have a quote from Ptah Hetep. It says, the wise one who acts with Ma'at is free of falsehood. Great is Ma'at, it is everlasting. Ma'at has been unchanged since the time of Al-Sar. And we go into detail about the proper and real Afurakani, Afurakaini, or African worldview. Now, the worldview, in reality, is the divine order. That's the Afurakani, Afurakaini worldview. It is Nyame wa Nyame and Sheshe. It is Amenet, Amen, Sesher. It is the divine plan and how everything that is created with a capital C, divinely created, fits into the universe, how we interact with one another. Everything that exists in the universe is not created. The coca plant is a naturally occurring entity in the universe. When the whites and their offspring took the coca plant that has been here for generations, naturally took it through a perverse process and created a product, crack cocaine, that has never existed before in the universe, now you have something that exists but was not created with a capital C. It wasn't created by divine fiat or by divine sanction. It was something that was made, so it would exist, but it was not created by the supreme being. It was not created by the forces in nature. It was not inspired by the supreme being. We can create new things under the direction of Heteru and Amenmen, or Afua and Kofi, Amenmen, these divinities, these forces of nature that deal with creativity and innovation and new things and so forth. We can be inspired by them. And when we're inspired by those forces, divine forces of innovation and creativity and adventure and so forth, we will create new things that have never existed, but they were inspired by the supreme being through the agency of the forces in nature, so they are divinely created entities. Some of our works of art, our music, dance forms, various different things that are inspired by the Abosom, the forces of nature, the Orisha, the Vodou. Those can be properly classified as divinely created entities with a capital C because they were inspired by the Supreme Being through the agency of the forces of nature. But if they're not inspired or directed as such, then it's something that exists, but it was not made. Crack cocaine exists, but it was not created with a capital C. So everything that exists is not that. So there's a difference between, again, divine law, male and female, divine hate, which stamps out things, objects, deeds, and entities that are not divinely created. So let me see if we, before we go forward, we had a bunch of calls, a bunch of callers online, and we had some, I had a couple of comments on the in the chat room. I just want to make sure it wasn't a question. I saw some comments. Okay, so one of them, okay, one of the comments is, but since the word hate is so loaded and so warped, won't folks miss this powerful message because they are caught up on the hate term? Some people initially are repulsed by the term hate, and of course that's because of conditioning. It's like some people are repulsed by the term black or Africa or anything else. But we need to teach the reality. The reality is the term hate comes directly from our language, and there are deities of hate. So we're going to teach people to embrace hate, to recognize that hate is divine, to recognize the divinities of hate, to embrace them and function in harmony with them. And people will start teaching hate, divine hate, to their children and everybody connected to them. And they will reverse that perverse misconception. When we're dealing with the Afurakani, Afurakaitini worldview, the proper African worldview, and we were talking about, again, that it's based on Nyamewa, Nyame, and Sheshir, Amenet, Amen, that share the divine order, the expansive and contractive pole of order, divine law and divine hate, how we fit into the universe, all created entities, Afurakani, Afurakaitini human life, and only Afurakani, Afurakaitini human life, because we're the only created human beings that exist and ever will exist, plant life, animal life, and mineral life, how we live in the created universe, how we interact with one another, how we live in harmony with each other as Afurakani, Afurakaitini people, how we have to recognize our enemies and how to move against our enemies, how to embrace law and reject disorder. This is the Afurakani, Afurakaitini worldview. Now, what happens is the whites and their offspring have been trying to infect that worldview, and that world is not just our particular view of the world. It's the world as it actually is. There's a difference between somebody having some subjective worldview and people trying to attempt to say that one person's worldview is no better than the other person's worldview because we all have different perspectives. That's pure foolishness. Our worldview is the view of the world that actually exists because we have the capacity to see the world and experience the forces that undergird the creation of the world. No other group of people have that capacity to align with, infuse with our energy, with the energy of the deities that actually undergirds the creation of the world and sustain the world. Therefore, we have a full view, and we can harmonize our thoughts, intentions, and actions with the world in a harmonious fashion. They can't do that. So they don't have a capacity to see the world as it is. They have a truncated view of the world just by nature or ill nature. And then because of their perversity, they even truncate that view even further. So we have an actual view of the world. The whites and their offspring have been trying to control and pervert our recognition of creation as it really is, and their primary objective is to remove the knowledge of the divinity of hate from our consciousness. The whites and their offspring first began invading ancient Afuraka, Afurakai, and of course we have the book Afuraka, Afurakai, the origin of the term Africa, showing that Africa does not come from the Europeans, doesn't come from Scipio Africanus and all this other foolishness. We prove conclusively in the language of ancient Kemet, in the Medutu, in the text, to show you where Afuraka, Afurakaida, Africa comes from. It's the land of the creator, land of the creatress. But the whites and their offspring began invading Afuraka, Afurakaida heavily over 4,000 years ago. They were waging war constantly in ancient Kemet and other areas. They typically lost most of those conflicts, those wars on a regular basis. They then began to gain a foothold, a stronghold in northern Kemet until about 2,300 years ago with the invasion of the Greeks, then later the Romans, and then the Arabs, and then, of course, later the Europeans and so forth. In the process, they were always trying to control the population. We were constantly winning the battles. They realized that the only way that they can try to control the population and destroy the culture is to wait for the culture to fracture from within, to implode from within. So for a while, they stopped trying to invade so much, they began to try to infiltrate and engage in trade and commerce. So they began to infiltrate bit by bit on the outskirts of Kemet, try to trade from the outskirts of Kemet, try to come in and work as mercenaries and so forth. Some of the misguided rulers amongst our people allowed them to be employed as mercenaries, allowed them to be employed in menial labor. Those who were enlightened, aware, cultural, and focused in our community would not allow them to engage or infiltrate at all. But you have some who were immature who said, hey, we've never been defeated by anybody in thousands of years. These little inferior, desert-dwelling, criminal, melanin recessives can't do anything to us, and anytime they've ever tried to invade, we've crushed them. So they are no threat. And physiologically and culturally and spiritually, they were no threat. But just like you can look at a mosquito and say, well, the mosquito is very weak. It's no threat. The mosquito can carry a virus, and it can be a threat, so you have to be intelligent. Something that's very weak can be a threat, especially if they're sucking on the blood of the community. So when they saw that the only way they could take control is if they took advantage of a fracturing from within the society, they would wait for us to have conflict. And we did have conflict within the society. There were people who were disgruntled with the status quo of leadership. Sometimes there would be internal fracturing. There would be succession disputes, political problems. Some people would go against the other groups within. There would be internal fighting. The whites and their offspring would try to take advantage of that. These were ways they would try to engage and arm different sides of the conflict or join one side of the conflict and join the other side of the conflict and see if they could tease out some control and influence in some area. This is something they engaged in for thousands of years. They never just swept into the continent and just waged war against us and took over. They were trying that for thousands of years. It was not working. So they had to wait until a time when we were fighting against one another and join one side against the other side and try to get some concessions after the war was over. This is how they began that process. But even when they did that, even with the Greeks invading, they didn't come in force, just 100% come in and just give us Greek culture and we just fell down and took Greek culture. What they did was actually the reverse. They began to infiltrate the culture, and they began to imitate the people of ancient Kemet. They dressed like the people of ancient Kemet. They took on names of the people of ancient Kemet. They started engaging in ritual like the people of ancient Kemet. They started exporting ritual artifacts, ritual practices into Greece and other parts of Europe. They began imitating us. They started building temples with images of themselves looking like the people of ancient Kemet. They did everything they could to imitate us. They didn't bring their culture wholesale. They brought their filthy, perverse selves and began to infiltrate our culture and try to turn it into a filthy, degenerate, and bisexual, homosexual culture, which was there. And that came much later. And by the time that happened, the culture had already ready to degenerate. But they tried to invade the culture. It's absolutely no different than their descendants. These white Greeks, Romans, and later Arabs, their descendants today, who are so-called white Hispanics, who are trying to invade the Yoruba culture, trying to invade Vodun, trying to invade Candomblé in South America. Some of them trying to invade Hoodoo in North America and Voodoo in North America and Juju in North America and so forth. And some of them trying to invade the Akan tradition or invade the Gullah Geechee culture and so forth. You always have these parasites, these perverse spirits of disorder, and all of them incarnate, again, in spirits of disorder, whether they're zygotes in the womb or the oldest wrinkled-up cracker you can find. They are spirits of disorder before they even get into the womb. And there is no exception. And when you engage your own spirituality and develop yourself ritually and align yourself with your own crop, you can attune to them and you can notice the difference between them and us. You can be at a bank or you can be at a store. Or you could stand next to somebody who has their little white cracker baby in a stroller. You can feel the perversity emanating from the spirit of that perverse white newborn, the same as you can feel from the adult, because they are a spirit of disorder that is consistently emanating disordered, discordant energy. That's their nature, because they have no crop. They have no anchor in divine order. They are divinely hated. They are cancerous cells in the body of black humanity. So that's a reality. So they always understood that they couldn't just wage war against us militarily. They tried to invade the culture, just like they did then. They're doing that now. For those of us who are not intelligent enough or aware enough to recognize what's happening, but people are waking up, and we're waking people up. But they recognize that even when they infiltrated the culture and spent hundreds of years infiltrating the culture, the Greeks invading the culture, later the Romans taking over from the Greeks and trying to pervert the culture and Europeanize the culture every step of the way, they were still imitating the people of ancient Kemet and dressing like us and everything else and trying to use the language and everything else. European Eurasians, who later became known as Arabs, invading the culture, still trying to take on certain aspects of it, trying to dress in certain ways, even though they brought about the perversion, Islam and later Christianity, Islam, Judaism, became the new perverse, fragmented corruption of our traditions that they tried to give to us as real religions, and they're just fake religions. They were still trying to imitate certain things that they saw us doing. You see that in the Catholic Church. You see that amongst these imams. You see it amongst these rabbis and so forth. They were still trying to corrupt the culture. They understood that militarily they could not crush us. Even if they won a battle here and there, they couldn't do anything because we would always return. We would always regroup. We would always expel them. But they understood that if they could corrupt the religion and corrupt the cosmology, then they could corrupt the minds of the people. So it took them thousands of years of constantly promoting perversity, living their entire lives promoting perversity, dying, their children growing up and promoting that perversity, living their entire lives dying, their children grow up promoting that perversity, living their entire lives promoting that and dying, and generation after generation constantly promoting that same perversions of our culture. After numerous generations, hundreds of years into thousands, small percentages of our people would grasp onto these false notions of identity, false notions of what law and hate is, because if they're embracing lust and whites in their offspring are promoting lust, some people who are lustful, who never had a chance to be free and lustful and disordered, now the whites and their offspring are giving you an opportunity to create a whole culture based on being lustful. We always had people who are lustful or malicious in the culture, but they understood that their behavior and their desires and their inclinations were perverse. So therefore, they would be shunned by the community. They would be admonished by the community. If they continued, they'd either be exiled or be taken out by the community. So they couldn't just dwell and bask in their lust and malice. They were forced to make a decision. Either I'm going to change, I'm going to be exiled, or I'm going to be executed. The whites and their offspring produced a new option that we never had ever in our true history, which was you could create an entire culture based on being lustful, based on being malicious. So now the people who are already weak like that and they had an option to join some other criminal, lustful, malicious individuals. Those are the people who would embrace the corruption of our culture. This is where you would get people taking Osiris, Set, and Heru, and the whites and their offspring, painting them white and making them Osiris, Isis, and Horus, or taking Ra and corrupting him into Helios and making him white, or taking Ptah and corrupting it into Buddha in the east and making it a white individual who never existed, or taking Muhammad, the deity of the Nile, making him white and calling him later Muhammad, or taking the title of Ra, Ra-Ur, or Ur-Ra, corrupting into Ulad, Alad, making it a white entity that teaches white perverse values and lies to the people and promotes white Arabs over black people and all this other nonsense, and the character, the entity doesn't even exist. Our people who are engaged with the whites and their offspring who are lustful and malicious embrace them. The criminal types who would normally get exiled or executed, they will line up with the whites and their offspring to try to get back at the larger society, the larger Afurakani, Afurakani society. Those are the people who would embrace the perversion of our culture and promote it as the new religion or promote it as the imperial fake religion once they help the whites and their offspring wage war against us. We've always had a small percentage, just like the cells in your body, be cancerous and become allies with outside toxins. You have a small percentage of people in the community become cancerous who would normally be executed. We've been executing them for tens of thousands of years, but now they had a new option. They could align themselves with other cancerous entities, the whites and their offspring, and come back as a unified force to try to take us down. We typically crushed that alliance as well for thousands of years. And that's why it took them so long to finally gain a foothold just in northern Kemet. So these are the people who would begin to promote false tradition. But it wasn't enough just to white images of divinities, because most of our people didn't go along with that. But when they began to corrupt the actual culture and cosmology, they started teaching that God is love, foolishness. Hate is evil. Turn the other cheek. All of this nonsense. Love your enemy. All these different variations of the same thing. If you remove hate from any cosmology, from the reality, you've just taken one half of creation out the picture. You've also taken your immunity out the picture. So therefore, you won't defend yourself, you won't embrace the forces of divine hate to kill your enemies and restore order to your situation. You have no defense. And when you have no defense, then the whites and their offspring can rule and their rule can be sustained. This is why they had to write divine hate out of religion. So they had to create fake religion. Christianity, Islam, Hebrewism, Judaism, Hinduism, Buddhism, Taoism, Kabbalism, Hermeticism, Sufism, all these pseudo-esoteric as well as exoteric pseudo-religious practices, all of them have the same foundation. First, remove the deities, the gods and goddesses, the black gods and goddesses from the consciousness of the people. Say that the deities don't exist, or if you do, like in Hinduism, then you're going to make them white. But that's in the East. In the West, you're going to say they don't exist. And then you're going to corrupt the philosophy. The primary mode of corruption is to remove the consciousness of the deities of hate. And if we don't fuse ourselves and embrace the forces of divine, the enforcers of divine order, enforceresses of divine order, then we will not be empowered and inclined to kill our enemies, and therefore they can maintain their rule. So that's the key to all of that. Okay, so somebody else had a question. Okay, so you said who are some of the other abosom of chi, of divine hate? So you have different ones, like, for example, another abosom that deals with that force is Mentu, also called Mentu, and he's the force in nature. He deals with protection, defense, operating through the adrenal glands, that fiery energy, that shot of adrenaline that you have. That's the physical seat of the spiritual force, divinity, Mentu or Mentu Ra, that's operating within your system. And then you have other female divinities. You have Mut, which can, she's a great mother, but she can also be a warrioress. You have Bastet. She can be cool and receptive, but she can also be a warrioress. You have Menhit, which is a lioness divinity. You have Mehen and Mehenet. You have a number of different divinities who deal with this fiery, contractive energy. All right, so let me make sure we don't have any. If anybody has a question, that was in the chat room, but if anybody has a question on the phone, just hit number one to raise your hand, and then we can give you a call. We can call on you. So what I want to do is I want to show some of the specifics as far as duality that you find in the text. I want to go through some of those. And that would be, and again, that would be going back to part 5. If you have the Maranechi text out, you'll be going back to part 5. And we just want to touch on those really quickly. They're detailed in the book, but we just want to touch on them so you can have an understanding. Okay. If you look on page, you look on page 54. Now, in fact, let's look on page 59. That's what we want to look at. Look on page 59. We talk about good and order and non-order. And then when you get to page 63, we look at the false complements, and then we look at the proper complement. Talking about disorder is the perversion of order, evil is the perversion of good, wrong is the perversion of right, and so forth. So let's look at those. People will tell you, again, that hate is, you know, low vibration of energy. Love, you fall in and out of love. What the whites and their offspring are talking about is the perversion of love is lust. That's a misguided desire. That's what they engage in. You can fall in and out of lust, but you can't fall in and out of love or law, because law and love is the same word, is the same concept. And when you know what love is or law is, you're talking about Ma'ah and Ma'at, two divinities. You don't fall in a deity, you don't fall out of a deity. You don't fall in and out of Ma'ah and Ma'at. These are divinities. When they talk about hate, and they say hate is wrong and so forth, and hate is negative, what they're talking about is malice, an evil intent to pervert and destroy. That's not hate, that's a perversion of hate. Hate is defined as the divine rejection of disorder for the purpose of maintaining the integrity of the divine order. So it's divine rejection. Anything that's out of harmony with divine order is rejected, is crushed, is stamped out, is exterminated, is expelled in order to maintain the integrity of the divine order. Malice has nothing to do with maintaining divine order. Malice is just an evil intent to pervert or destroy. You have a lust, you want to engage in something that's criminal, and you're malicious, and you're going to continue. You don't care what kind of destruction it causes. You don't care what kind of disorder it causes. In fact, you want to create disorder. That's malicious. That's what the whites and their offspring are engaged in. They deal in lust and malice. They don't deal in divine law or love, and they don't deal in divine hate. So when they say the whites and their offspring hate people, they can't embrace divine hate. Hate means that you're embracing divine order and you're stamping out disorder and its purveyors. The whites and their offspring cannot align with Heru Behudet and Sechima or Benai and Abena. They don't have the capacity to align with the Abosom or the Orisha of divine hate. All they can align with is malice. If they were to align with the forces of divine hate, they would exterminate themselves and they would no longer exist. That's what hate would do. But they can't embrace divine hate just like they can't embrace any other divinity in creation. They're no different, again, as we use this analogy all the time. You have two magnets on the table and one repels the other. The spirit of disorder, the whites and their offspring, whether they're a baby in the womb or somebody 70, 80 years old, spirits are spirits of disorder. They can't even come close to these forces in nature. They are repelled by the forces of nature. It cannot fuse with them. Just like that magnet can't touch the other one, it gets repelled before it could even get close. The magnetic field repels it. Afurakani, Afurakaini people, we have a kra. We have an okrawa. We have a ka, a kaeta, soul, a divine consciousness. We have a divinity that dwells in our head region that always pulls us in harmony with divine order. Because we have that within us, the ka and the kaeta, and because we have a divine life spirit that animates us, a ba, male, and baet, female, the magnetic field spiritually and physically that emanates from us is not in harmony with the whites and their offspring. They are repulsive to us. We repel them without speaking. It has nothing to do with their behavior. It has to do with their nature. If they didn't open their mouth, if they didn't even look at us, their spirits are repulsive. Their bodies are repulsive. Even if you have your eyes closed and you're a little bit in tune, you can feel the discordant energy emanating from them. They are repulsive. That's divine hate, just like that magnet pushing the other one across the table. That's a natural repulsion, and it will never revert. It's always going to be until they become extinct. So they can't fuse with Amen and Amenet, of course. They can't fuse with Ma'an, Ma'at. They can't fuse with Heru, Behudet, and Sechima. They can't fuse with any divinity at all. So they can't harmonize with divine hate. If they did, they would be destroyed. If they tried to fuse with that repulsion, they would explode. They would destroy. They would be destroyed. They're pushed back from divine hate. So all they can deal with is malice. They can't embrace hate, and they can't embrace love. Those are divine things. Only Afurakani, Afurakaini people can deal with that. So, okay, hold on one second. Somebody said, okay, so the brother, okay, you published it. Somebody was asking about what book has it. So it's Mara Nechi, Divine Law, Love and Divine Hate. PDF, you can download that for free. Okay, and the brother posted the link up there. All right. Okay, and I just wanted to check this line right quick. All right, so now we talked about that. Now, when we're talking about divine order, if we use the example in the book, if you have some clay, it's unordered, it's not yet formed, and then you take the clay and you form it into pottery, into pots. It went from an unformed state to a formed state. It went from just clay, unformed clay, and now the clay is formed into pots. Now, it went from unformed to formed, uncreated to created. Now, if someone comes along and takes a hammer and destroys the pots that you just created and breaks them up into potsherds that are all over the floor, that's a perversion of that which was created. In the unformed state, the clay is in a state of non-order. Then you ordered it into pots. It went from non-order to order. That's the balance. The balance of order is non-order. The balance of that which is formed is that which is unformed. The unformed clay and the formed clay into pots, that's the balance. The state of non-order of the clay to order, that's the balance. If somebody came up to the ordered pots with a hammer and beat them up and broke them up and destroyed them and shattered them, that is disorder. That is a perversion of the order. It is not the balance of order. The whites and their offspring will try to trick people into believing that disorder is the opposite of order. Disorder is evil. So the opposite of evil, meaning disorder, they would say is good, and they'll say good and evil are two halves of a whole. What is good and what is ordered is the same concept. So order and good is the same concept. So again, if you go to the non-ordered state of clay, that's non-ordered. It's like the black substance of space. Unordered. It's a black, thick substance, but it's unordered at the beginning of pre-creation. Then you take that clay and form it into pots. That's like Ra and Ra'at forming portions of that black substance, carving out black spheres that will later become stars and planets. the black substance went from a state of non-order to a state of order, stars, planets, and so forth that revolve around each other in harmony. You went from clay, which was non-ordered, to clay that was ordered into round pots. That order is the same thing as good. That's why in Akan, there's a proverb that says, all that Nyamewa created is good. The created universe is good, meaning order. If somebody comes along with the hammer again and breaks up the pot, now that which is ordered, meaning that which is good, has been perverted. The perversion of the order, the broken pot, is not the balance. It's a perversion of the already existing order, the evil. Evil is not the opposite of good, it's the perversion of the good. The opposite of good, meaning the opposite of order, is non-order. This order, the perversion of order. The whites and the offspring will teach that good and evil are two halves of a whole. The pseudo-metaphysical fools who embrace the whites and the offspring will say that that's just the balance. There's a continuum of divine, you know, good and evil, and you have to learn the balance between good and evil, and there's no right and there's no wrong, there's balance. That's pure nonsense. It's an ignorance of cosmology. We just showed that non-order and order is the balance. It's the same thing with the right and wrong. Right and good and order are all the same concept, and their balance is that which is not yet formed, not yet ordered, not yet made. So when you have wrong or you have evil, you have a corruption of what has already been formed. When you have the whites and their offspring, they are spirits of disorder. They are perversion of the created order, which in the human sphere is Afurakane, Afurakane people. Therefore, the opposite of the Afurakane man is the Afurakane woman. Opposite of the Afurakane woman is the Afurakane man. The opposite of the Afurakane man is not the white man. That is a perversion of a man, but it's not the opposite. The opposite of the Afurakani man is the Afurakani woman. The opposite of the Afurakani Afurakani people, meaning the only created people that were ever fashioned in the universe by divine sanction, are the uncreated people, which are the ancestresses and ancestors. You have the melanin-dominant physically formed people, the black people, and then you have the unformed people, the ancestral spirits who have not yet taken form again. That's the balance between our two communities. White people are a perversion of the created people. Asians are a perversion of the created people. Pseudo-Native Americans, which are just Asians who migrated and invaded this area after we were already here, are just perversions of the created people. They are not the balance of the people. They are the cancerous cell. They are not the balance of the cell. They are disruption or a disfigurement of the cell. So we, in the text, we show the differences between non-order and order being the balance, and then order, good, right, and so forth, all being the same concept, and they're balanced by that which is not yet formed, not yet ordered, not yet created. And then wrong, evil, and so forth, being and disorder being a corruption of what the created order or the goodness already is. That is key, because those individuals who have embraced psychology, those individuals who have embraced perverse forms of ancestral religion by going to the continent of Afuraka, Afuraikai, or South America, or the Caribbean, or North America, and being initiated by individuals, especially on the continent, who have been infected with Islam for the past 1,000 plus years, infected with Christianity for the past few centuries, and have woven those corruptions, 1,000 plus year corruptions and infections, into a pseudo-traditional religious practice. But when you go to these people and say, how long have you held these concepts and taught these things the way that you have? They'll say, well, we've been teaching like this as far back as we can remember. And if they go back a generation or two generations or 10 generations, that would be about 200 years. If they went back 40 generations, That would be 800 years. But what they've gone back to, or if they went back 50 generations, that would be 1,000 years. Most people can't give you 50 generations of their lineage, going back to 50 grandparents. But even if somebody could and said, we can go back 1,000 years and we were practicing the same way we're practicing right now, they would be telling the truth, some of them. But 1,000 years ago, when our people were in Timbuktu before we came down to the forest belt, Negroes were already involved in Islam and Christianity and Hebrewism and nonsense like that. So they were already corrupted. So that's 1,000-plus-year infection. So if somebody says they've been practicing this way for 1,000 years or 2,000 years or as far back as they can remember, that doesn't mean that what they're practicing is true. Many of them are engaged in corrupt practices. Yes, you have people who engage in real practices, but you have many who are engaged in corrupt practices. And people come from over here and go there and learn from so-called elders. They see somebody in a shrine house. They see somebody who's 90 years old or 100 years old, and they speak the language, and they wear the clothes, and, of course, they eat the foods, and they engage in ritual practices and have shrines and engage in divinatory practices and sacrifices and things that you've never seen before, and it appears that what they're doing is so ancient. And in reality, they're engaged in corruptions that have been lingering for 1,000-plus years. And then they give you a false cosmology and initiate you into a false cosmology and a false ritual practice. And you come back to America thinking that you've been initiated by some high spiritual elders and elderesses. And you begin to teach nonsense to people in America. And you start teaching that the Odu teach that hate is wrong. You start teaching that Islam is in the Odu. You start teaching that the Abosom don't teach hate, they teach love. All of this is pure nonsense. It's inaccurate. People have put things in the Odu that don't exist. And they'll lie to you and tell you that's part of the Odu and it's not. No real Odu is going to tell any black person to embrace Islam. The Orisha know that Muhammad never existed. They know Bilal never existed. They know Allah is a fictional character. The Orisha know all of this, of course, and they will never direct any authentic priest or priestess to teach that nonsense. Anybody teaching that nonsense is either, number one, a complete fraud, and they're lying to people and stealing money from people deliberately, or they're just a brainwashed Negro who was trained by somebody who was a fraud or trained by somebody else who was brainwashed. Either way, they're giving you false information, and they're taking your money at the same time and helping you perpetuate the ignorance of the whites and their offspring. The same is true in Vodun. The same is true in the Akan tradition. The same is true in the Igbo tradition. The same is true in Mali amongst the Bamana people and Guromachi people in Burkina Faso and Fula people, people, Bakongo people, all across the continent. Anybody who has embraced the whites and their offspring on some level and have incorporated those infections, they will pass those infections on. Then that infects the so-called worldview of the people contemporary on the continent now, and then the people who have studied the work of these people or have sat with these people here in America. So then you have people who are PhDs in African studies and PhDs and who are psychologists and some who are psychiatrists and writing books and teaching people and doing lectures and presentations and having workshops and establishing schools and establishing temples and establishing comedic temples and meditation sessions and creating comedic priesthoods and so forth and what they are teaching. So then when you come to realize that and you challenge them, their response is, well, I went to the continent, and therefore, I know what I'm talking about because I learned from some brainwashed, infected pseudo-elders who were either deliberately lying to me or because they were so infected, they passed on an infection and they didn't even realize what they were passing on. There are some people who are infected with the disease and they deliberately infect other people. There are other people, you can catch a virus from somebody, contract a virus from somebody at work, and then you come home and bring that virus to your family. And people are getting sick and throwing up and everything else. You unwittingly brought the virus into the home. you were an agent of a virus. You may not have recognized it, but that's what you effectively had become. There are many people who are bringing a virus of perverse culture, white Islamic, white Christian, white Jewish, white pseudo-metaphysical, white Greek, homosexual, dissexual culture. They're bringing it into America as agents because they got the virus from Negroes who were infected on the continent and who are still infected on the continent, and they bring it into our culture here. And then they spread that virus. They've been spreading that virus for over 50 years in America. So whether it's the Akan, Yoruba, Igbo, so-called Kemetic, Vodun, Bakongo, Palo, and other different traditions, you'll find the infection running rampant. Our traditions, our real traditions, are carried in our blood circle. We have ancestresses and ancestors. We show that if you have two parents, four grandparents, eight great-grandparents, 16 great-great-grandparents, if you keep going back every generation, the number increases exponentially. By the time you get to the 32nd generation, you have over 8 billion grandparents on that level alone, billion with a B. You have all these individuals in your blood circle. Now, over the past 30, and of course, we've been here for millions of years, so you have many more than 8 billion. I guess some of them have reincarnated and so forth, but you have at least thousands of people who are spiritually cultivated ancestresses and ancestors who can guide you properly. In fact, they are assigned to us pre-incarnation, specifically for the purpose of giving us guidance. There are abosom, orisha, assigned to us pre-incarnation, specifically to assist us to execute our function in creation. Every Afurakani, Afurakaitni person has a specific function to execute in creation in the great divine body of Amen and Amenet, just like every cell in your body has a specific function to execute within the great within your body. So we have a function, we have a mission, we have a so-called life focus or purpose that's encoded within our soul, within our cry, which is a deity that dwells in the head region. And we have a book that deals with that, the Okra Complex, the Soul of Akanfo, where we go into detail about that deity. However, encoded within that force, your divine consciousness, your spirit's brain, your soul, that force in your head, is your function to execute. You have a bosom that govern your head that were assigned to you pre-incarnation, before you went into the womb. You were assigned these abosom by the Supreme Being, by Nyame wa Nyame, and then you were sent into the womb. These abosom, or these orisha, these vodu, are born with you into the world. No one can give them to you. They are born with you. Only Nyame wa Nyame, or Amenet Amen, can give you or assign deities to you, and that's done pre-incarnation. People in the world can only acknowledge the abosom that you came into the world with, but they can't give you a shrine, and there's an abosom or an orisha connected to the shrine. Now they just gave you an orisha. That's totally inaccurate. The only thing they can give you is a shrine. If the orisha is already connected to you pre-incarnation, and if it's in harmony with order, then the orisha can take up residence in the shrine. If it's not in harmony with order, they will never take up residence in any shrine if it's not in harmony with order. They don't follow the dictates of human beings. They only follow the dictates of the Supreme Being. So you come into the world with these forces of nature that empower you to execute your specific function. If you're an immune system cell in creation, you'll be naturally inclined to protect the community. If you're a digestive cell in creation or a lymphatic cell in creation, you may be naturally inclined, or an excretory cell in creation, you'll naturally be inclined towards healing and so forth. If you're a reproductive cell in the divine body of the Supreme Being, you'll be naturally inclined towards creativity and things like that, innovation, invention, various kinds of things. You have a specific function and natural inclinations that are reflective of the function that you were given in by the Supreme Being and the deities that govern you. Those deities will give you the power to execute your function. You may be governed by fiery divinities, and you'll have that fiery temperament, and you'll be fed that fiery kind of energy. Somebody else may be a cool, watery individual because they were assigned cool, watery kinds of divinity. They're more introspective, intuitive, deal with certain kinds of healing, certain kinds of divination, certain kinds of interactions with certain people. Depending on what kind of function you have, you'll be assigned forces in nature that have the energy that assists you to carry out that function and replenish your stores of energy so you can carry out that function. You have ancestresses and ancestors assigned to you by the Supreme Being, honorable ancestresses and ancestors only, that are assigned to you to assist you and give you guidance while you're living in the world and executing your function. They will not live your life for you. They will not do what you need to do yourself, but they will give you the right kind of guidance about how to use that energy you've been given by the Abosom, the Orisha, in a harmonious way based on your genetic makeup. Because we migrated to different areas, because we went through certain experiences, because we've interacted with people in certain ways in certain areas, we've developed a certain kind of clan that's different from somebody else's clan a few hundred miles away or 1,000 miles away. So the way that we pull in the energy of Heru Behudet and Sechima may be slightly different than somebody in a different clan that pulls in that energy. We may have a dietary taboo that they don't have based on their trustory, based on their migration patterns, based on how they've settled and how they've operated for thousands of years. But for us, we've operated in different ways, and we have a dietary taboo that they don't have. Only the ancestresses and ancestors of your clan can show you what your taboos are and what your people are, who you are, and how you are to function, how you're to harmonize with the same forces in nature that all Afurakani, Afurakaitini people deal with, sun, moon, earth mother, rivers, oceans, atmosphere, planetary bodies, and so forth. We deal with them all, but based on our ancestry, we have a specific means by which we deal with them. And only the ancestresses and ancestors of your clan who are honorable can show you how to harmonize with those forces in nature based on your specific clan structure. They are assigned to you pre-incarnation, before you get into the womb. So you have divinities, Orisha, Abosom, Ntoru, Ntorotu, meaning Neteru, Netertu. You have divinities that are assigned to you, and you have ancestresses and ancestors who are assigned to you pre-incarnation. So when we're born into the world, we have that. And, of course, we have a force in our head, our consciousness, our divinity, our direct line to the Supreme Being, our spirit's brain, within us that's always pulling us towards divine order. And when you have that, then you have a full tradition that you are born with to access. You're not dependent on traveling to the continent, traveling away from where you are, traveling away from yourself to access your own ancestral and religious culture, your authentic ancestral religious culture. So once you deal with your ancestresses and ancestors, you can retrieve that. And when you deal with these individual dealing with the Abosom that have been with you and your family for millennia, you can attune to what is correct. You can attune to what is not correct. You reject nonsense coming from people who have embraced foolishness under the guise of traditional religion and are trying to force this foolishness on you. Somebody tries to force you to accept the whites and their offspring on any level, you know they're either deliberately lying to you or they're just ignorant and haven't been trained by an infected elder or elderate, but they don't know what they're talking about. It doesn't matter how long they've been initiated, how long they've been involved in the culture, how many divinations they've done, all of that is absolutely meaningless. Those are credentials that have no meaning whatsoever. If they're not telling the truth, then everything else means nothing. Your ancestresses and ancestors are your elders and elderesses. If anybody says anything that does not comport with what they direct you to do, then you reject what those people say and you follow what your ancestresses and ancestors direct you to do. They will give you what's true and what's false. We know this sexuality or homosexuality is insane, perverse, is degenerate, is nonsense. So anybody saying that the Orisha embrace this sexuality or homosexuality or embrace the Abosom, embrace that, they're either deliberately lying to you or they've been lied to themselves and they're promoting that infection. But your crowd will tell you it's foolishness. Your Nsamafo will tell you it's foolishness. Your Abosom will tell you it's foolishness. Your Orisha and Egungun and your Ori will tell you it's foolishness. So you follow the real. You don't follow the fool. It doesn't matter how many years they've been a Babalao. That means nothing. That's foolishness. We don't need to be caught up in some pseudo-religious titles. The only thing that's important is Nyamewa Nyame Nsheshe. And we can confirm it, what we've been given ritually, directly from our Nsamafo, spiritually. We can confirm it physically. Because one thing that our direct blood ancestresses and ancestors did physically was they laid out our cosmology and culture thousands of years ago physically in ancient Kemet and Kanit. So in the temples, tombs, shrines, on papyri, sarcophagi, and so forth, you will find the cosmology laid out. The most extensive record of religious literature anywhere in the world you find in ancient Kemet. So the cosmology is laid out. The names of the deities that you find are the same names across the continent. The same language that you find is the same language across the continent. The same cosmology you find intact, you will find across the continent. If you look in the language and the culture, you will find it, even if people are practicing a perverse, truncated form of it, if you look in the language and culture, and then compare it to what you find in ancient Kemet, you will find the entire cosmology, even though some people are neglecting large portions of it. So you can find out and confirm physically what your ancestors and ancestors have given you spiritually because they laid it out physically, carved in stone, painted on papyri, carved in vessels and shrines and artifacts that we can find today. And we can touch them and read them and feel them and study them and copy them and share them with one another. And what you find there, you will find exactly comports with what your Nsamafo, your ancestresses and ancestors and the Abosom share with you spiritually. And therefore, you have a physical record and a spiritual communication of that physical record. It's a full circle, spiritual and physical. You're given that correct information. Okay, so you said divine, how about call it divine repulsion and rejection? That's a way to explain it, but hate is critical. People need to incorporate the word hate into their consciousness. They need to start, and they will start, and many people are starting to use the word hate and divine hate, gods and goddesses of hate. We need to embrace hate. It has power. It has force. It's a word that comes from our language. Our culture. It is a title of Sekhchima, Sekhmet. It's a title of Heru Behudet. We're not going to stop using their titles because brainwashed Negroes are too scared to hear it. We're going to make them hear it and make them start to understand it. And for those who are just never will come around, then they won't come around. But there are millions of our people who know down within their craw, within their spirit and within their soul, that hate is divine. Most of our people hate the white narrow spread. The only reason they don't express it is because people have told them that it's wrong, so they have to suppress it. So they've been suppressing it all their lives, but deep down inside, they've always wanted to express it. So when we teach divine hate and teach the divinity of hate and teach about the divinities of hate, then the response is always the same. They're relieved because they say, I always knew that was true. I couldn't put my finger on it. I always knew they were lying. I always knew it was nothing wrong with me for hating the whites and their offspring or hating bisexuality, homosexuality, or hating any kind of perverse activity. But they just couldn't put their finger on it. But now they feel relieved. They're free. They're no longer oppressed and suppressed with misinformation. Okay, so one of the questions is, what are some of the ways to contact our ancestors? So we have an article called Nkomre, Ancestral Shrine Communication, and you can find that on the website, ojirafo.com, on the index page. Once you go through the introduction and everything, you'll find the various links to all of our publications. So Ancestral Shrine Communication is the ritual centerpiece Nanasom of Afurakani, Afurakani, and ancestral religion across the board, wherever we exist in the world. the ancestresses and ancestors are the link to the divinity. There are blood link, there are spiritual link. The deities possess our people thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago. When those deities first possessed our people through ritual song, ritual dance, possession got into the bodies of our people, the energy moving through the bodies of our people. Just like we see our people today play songs, play traditional drums, dance or whatever, whether it's on the continent or even in America, ritually, and they get possessed by a force of nature. What happens is when that first happened, that energy moving through the bodies affected the cells of our people, the cellular structure of our people. It began to resonate. Just like if you walk through radiation, that's going to affect your cells. That'll affect your cells in a negative fashion. People living under power lines and things like that, and their cells become disrupted, cancerous. But the kind of radiation or vibratory frequency of a force in nature possessing the body of one of our ancestors or ancestresses that affected our cells in a positive fashion. The orbit of the electrons around the protons and neutrons of the molecular structure of our people, those cells were stimulated in a positive way. And that included the sperm and ovum cells. So when they had children, those children's bodies resonated at the frequency of the divinity that possessed the person. So it's through the ancestresses and ancestors that the deities came through, and they transmit the energy of the deities to us, their descendants. So ancestral communication is a ritual, is the ritual centerpiece of religious practice. So we have an article dealing with ancestral shrine communication. We also have a related article, and they're all in the same section, called Ensamain Kom and the Seven Senses, talking about we have seven senses, not just five, and it is through these seven senses, like you have, of course, sight, but then you have clairvoyance. You can see beyond the physical. People can see spirits walking around. Some people can see that. Some people have clairaudience, but they can hear beyond the physical. They can hear spirits communicating with them or speaking. Some people are so receptive they can hear it all the time and they don't know how to handle it because this culture has taught them there's something wrong with that. So therefore they think they're crazy and they go to a therapist and they get medication or they're sent to a mental institution and there's nothing wrong with them at all. If somebody can hear the ancestresses and ancestors and other discarnate spirits and they need to learn how to work with that. Some people are clairaudient. Some people are clairsentient, meaning they can't necessarily see or hear the ancestresses and ancestors of discarnate spirits, but they can feel them. They can feel heat moving through their body when a spirit walks by. They feel real cold when a spirit walks by and so forth. Different things happen. Some people are clairalien, meaning they can smell. They can smell when the spirit walks by. They can smell the scent of that entity coming by. And they know who it is. They can communicate in that way. You have people who are what we would call clairequilibrant, meaning they can be thrown off balance when a spirit is in their presence. They begin to get dizzy. They can't maintain their equilibrium, or there's a shift in their equilibrium. So that's another sense. Your sense, of course, you have sight, and you have touch, and you have smell, and you have hearing, and so forth, but then you also have your sense of balance. That's a sense. You also have a sense of time, which is also distance and space and so forth. But you have a sense of time, you have a sense of balance. When you, spiritually, you have clear equilibrium, or you can sense things spiritually beyond the physical balance. So a spirit comes by you, it throws your equilibrium off. So we use the term clear equilibrium to deal with that. The sense of time, somebody can be in ritual space, sitting at an ancestral shrine, or they can get possessed by a divinity and they lose their sense of time. They're clairtimian. When the spirit, an ancestral spirit comes by them or moves through them or communicates with them, it throws their sense of time off, or it enhances their sense of focused time. So we show that these are different ways that the ancestresses and ancestors communicate to different people. It's different for everybody. Of course, they also communicate through dreams and also through ritual practices, but the centerpiece is ancestral communication. And then in the book, Okra Okra Complex, The Soul of Our Confo, we also deal with dealing, establishing a shrine for your kra, your soul, your divine consciousness, your ka, or ori inu, that is called in Yoruba tradition. That force in that dwells in the head region that is the regulator of all your activity. Encoded within your kra, your divine consciousness, your spirit's brain is your specific function executing the world. Okay. Okay, Mid Alsay for sharing that, brother. 10 minutes. We have 10 minutes on the live stream. So if you want to stay for the after overtime, you would have to call in. So you have 10 minutes, 9 minutes to call in. The call in number is 657-383-0635. 657-383-0635. If you want to stay on the program beyond 11 o'clock, so you have 9 minutes. Okay, so brother asked, I'm going to ask if astrology is part of our ascendic practice. Now, astrology in the sense of the way the whites and their offspring teach these things, like these tropical astrology charts that you see in newspapers, or the sidereal chart that you see some Hindus using and some other people using, no, that's not part of our practice. You'll get closer when people start talking about the astronomical zodiac, where the actual sun signs actually begin and end. So they're not all, 12 signs of 30 days each. That's not accurate. Like when the sun rises and sets, there are certain constellations that are, across the ecliptic. So there are actually 13, they're not 12. Thousands of years ago, there were 12 constellations that crossed the ecliptic. Now there are 13. And there are deities that are associated with these constellations. They're not all 30 days each. One of them is 7 days, one is 45 days, one is 25, one is 32. They're different lengths depending on how long that specific constellation is, crosses the ecliptic. So when you read something talking about the astronomical zodiac, then you have an actual time frame, but the difference is, of course, the names of these different characters as promoted by the whites and their offspring are different. So when they're talking about Gemini and it's, two twins, they got that from the two twins, Shu and Tefnut. When they're talking about, for example, let's pick one, all the different ones. Each one is associated with a divinity from ancient Kemetic. For example, the scorpion, the divinity Serket, the scorpion goddess, that's where they got that from. Ophiuchus, the serpent bearer, which is the 13th, quote-unquote, sign of the zodiac, that's actually, they'll try to say it's Asclepius, which is the corruption of Imhotep, is actually Sechima, or Sekhmet, who's the great warrioress, lioness divinity, but she's also a healeress, and she's the serpent bearer. She wears a serpent on her head. So those 13 constellations are governed by divinities from ancient Kemet, and the days, the length of days are different. Now, even with that, those are influential, but they are not determinant. What's determinant for Apurakani, Apurakaini people are the deities that you were assigned to before you came into the womb. Those are what determine your function in creation, how you are to function, what forces in nature you are aligned with so that you can replenish your energy through them, through invocations of them while you're here, and the different ancestresses and ancestors that have been assigned to you pre-incarnation. When you come into the world and certain constellations are present, and that collection of energy is shining down on the earth and therefore affecting the earth's atmosphere, and therefore when you take in a deep breath, it's affecting your body and your cells and everything else. It has an influence, but it's not determinant. It's just influential. What's determinant is the divinity you are born with. So that's key. You need to, first, you learn your ancestral clan by dealing with your ancestresses and ancestors directly, establishing an ancestor shrine and learning who your people are. And they are waiting to tell you who you are, and most of them have already given you an indication just by directing you to specific information, a specific sculptures a specific motif or certain things that are connected to a specific group that you're more attracted to than all the other others on the continent, even though you may like all the other kinds of dress and kinds of drums and kinds of clothing and language or whatever, but you'll find one that you're more drawn to than all the others. They're they're letting you know that this is the culture that not only you were, that you're from, but you used to be a part of in a previous incarnation, a previous lifetime, before the Musu Okeke or the, you know, great perversity enslavement happened. So the first thing is they will show you who you are. You deal with an ancestral, you know, shrine and communicating with your people. And then they will be able to begin to show you the morality of our culture. Again, as you read through the book and you will hear people talking about there's no such thing as morality. Everything is subjective. Morality, there's moral relativism. What's good for one person is, you know, bad for another, and what's bad for one person is good for another. Again, that's foolishness, white perversity. Even some Afrocentric, so-called Afrocentric or African-centered individuals teach this nonsense because they're reading the Kabbalah, they're reading the Kabbalion, they're reading Hermeticism, they're reading Hermes, Hermetic texts, and all of this nonsense. And they've never fully invested ancestral cultures. One thing you talk about, Kemet, recreated everything, established civilization, and all these different things. But then when you're looking for the ritual practices, then you sneak off to white bookstores, white New Age bookstores, you get online and read white New Age material, and then you turn around and try to blacken it up and represent it to us as ancient, authentic, quote-unquote, Kemetic teachings, which it is not. You're just promoting nonsense. And a lot of our so-called Afrocentric scholars and individuals are doing that. And they teach that, you know, morality is relative and it's, you know, it's no such thing as an either-or dichotomy because that's, you know, a white dichotomy and both and is our, that's foolishness. We have either-or as well as both and. Yet there are things that there is an absolute truth. Some people say there's no absolutes except for God and there's no absolutes in creation and all this other nonsense. All of that comes from the white narrow spring. There is absolute truth. This is what Ma'a and Ma'at represent, absolute truth. This is why Ptah Hetep says Ma'at is everlasting. It has been unchanged since the time of Asar, unalterable, unbendable, unbreakable, irrefutable, absolute truth. That's what Ma'a and Ma'at are. So, you know, all these different things, we go into detail in the book. So Ancestral Shrine, and the second part was dealing with your Kra, soul, divine consciousness, and we talk about establishing a shrine for your Kra or your Ka, your Kaet. We have ritual prayers on the website in the language of Kemet. We have a particular document where we show a specific sample prayer in the language of Kemet with the vocalizations coming from the three languages of the Akan. We can show that come directly from ancient Kemet and an actual audio that you can listen to and hear that particular prayer as well as read it out and read the analysis associated with it. So when you engage that process, you have detailed information about what you're doing. Let me know if that answers your question. Okay. And the question is there proper ways to hate and improper ways to hate? Because I've been told that hate can be unhealthy and destructive. So anybody who tells you that hate can be unhealthy and destructive is either deliberately lying to you or they're specifically, they're just been brainwashed themselves. It's impossible for hate to be destructive because hate is a deity. Abina or Sechima is the female deity of divine hate. Hate is a deity. The male deity of hate is Bena or Ogun or Herubehudet, Herakuti. It's impossible for embodiment of divine order, which the deities are, to be unhealthy or destructive in a negative sense. Now, Abina and Bena, Herubehudet, they destroy disorder. That's the destruction that they engage in, but it's not destructive. Negroes who fear the whites and their offspring They're scared to confront the whites in the Arab Spring. They're scared to confront anything. So they will retreat into, well, we love all things, because deep down inside they fear their enemies. They're too cowardly to confront their enemies, so they retreat into this stance of we love everything, and God says love everything, and therefore it's all good. And if you do anything outside of loving everything, then you're engaged in disorder. You take the veneer off of that. What they're really saying is, I'm scared, I'm weak, I'm a coward, I'm a Negro, I don't want to confront the enemy like I'm supposed to, so therefore I have to cover it by saying I love everybody. And then I have to force you to believe it so you won't figure out that I'm just a coward. That's what most people are doing. In reality, your immune system is the vehicle of divine hate in your body. Is your immune system ever destructive or unhealthy? Your immune system is what keeps you healthy. Yes, you can eat different foods and nutrients and everything else, but if you don't have an immune system, you would never be healthy. When you reject disorder, you're engaged in divine hate. When you repel the white narrow spring, their culture and their pseudo-religion, and repel any individual or entity that is perverse and out of order, you're engaged in divine hate. If you're accepting of perversity, then you're not engaged in divine hate. So physically or physiologically, think of your immune system. That's the vehicle of divine hate. That's your physical immunity. Your spiritual immunity, which causes you to repel disorder, that's divine hate. So they let me know if that answers your question. Just looking through these different statements. Okay. Cool. All right. So let me see. And if anybody in the call queue, if you have a question, let me see. I think I see somebody with a question. Hold on. Okay, Vichiamo. Yes, greetings, 8845, got a question or a comment?
Yeah, Machiamo, I actually don't have a problem with hating white people at all after everything that they've done to our people. But the question that I have for you is, how could I engage in, you know, some practices that would help me invoke Heru Behudet and Sechima to, you know, invoke that energy to hate them even more, you know, in times of war, which I feel like we're going to come to soon with the Achiwade quote. You know, how could I engage in some type of practice or to invoke, help me invoke those energies to be able to protect me and my family?
Okay, so what it is when you engage, and this is for yourself, but then it's for every Afro-Akani person just across the board. Whatever Abosom or Orisha Vodou that are connected to you, that you were born into the world with, those are the Abosom that you invoke to harmonize your thoughts, your intentions, and actions. They are connected to you. They are connected to your blood circle. You're naturally inclined towards them anyway. Even ever since you were a child, you would be inclined towards certain kinds of behaviors, certain things, and you'd be repulsed by other things you don't want to engage in. You're naturally inclined to certain things, and you'll find out later when you start studying who these forces in nature are, you'll start to be able to reflect on how you've always been naturally inclined, whether you were allowed to engage in that kind of behavior or not, but you'll still be able to pinpoint it, and so forth. So whatever forces you are associated with, then those are the ones you would invoke. On a fundamental level, your immune system is governed, and lymphatic system, they are governed by Heru Behudet and Sechima. Some people are direct children of them, so they will be the people who engage in, you know, military-type activity. There are other people, say, for example, who may be a child of Nana Adjua in the Akan tradition, which is Offset in ancient Kemet, Uchat in ancient Kemet, Ojuwa in the Yoruba tradition, Minona in Vodun, Ide Mili in the Igbo tradition. So they may be connected to her, and say they may be a healer and a protector of family and things like that. However, when wartime comes, they may not be the one with the gun or the steel, but they will support the people who are you know, they won't reject those people. They will support them with every resource they can, and they will protect the children at the same time and continue to heal. So you have people who are healing while the other people are actually engaged in the physical warfare. So if you are a child of Heru Bethedet and Sechimado Bina Abina, you would naturally, as part of your ritual practice with your own kra and the deity that governs your kra, your soul, when you establish a shrine for your kra, for your soul, for your ori, you would naturally invoke them. If you're not a child of them, on a fundamental level, just in a general level, they operate through your immune system anyway. So when you interact with other people who are children of them, you will naturally support their activity just like they would naturally support yours. There's a defensive function within, you know, all of the forces in nature, because they're all children of Ra and Ra'et, and Ra and Ra'et, the creator and creatress of the universe, are expansive and contractive. They're generative and they're also protective. So you always have just a fundamental defensive structure, just like you have your immune system in your body. But people who are children of Heru Bethedet and Sechima, they will naturally invoke them. Whatever divinity connected to you, you will naturally invoke them. And you'll find that out as you establish that shrine to your crown. First, we always say establish a shrine to your ancestresses and ancestors to start learning about who you are and attuning with them. And they'll move you and urge you throughout the day in your dreams, realign you, give you different things to think about, change your focus on different things, and you'll start being able to see things clearly and more penetrating and start studying things in a different way. And they will put the information in front of you and people in front of you to confirm the things they give you at your shrine. And then eventually you establish a shrine for your crown, start learning to deal with that force that dwells within your head region. And that's the force that you were assigned to function under. So that's the divinity you will be, you know, invoking. But they're all there. Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry. How would I establish a shrine for my Accra? How would I go about doing that?
Okay. If you look in two things, if you look in the on the website, we have a book called The Accra Complex, The Soul of Akamfo. On the website, it's a free download. The PDF version is a free download. We also have on the same page, when you go to the page for that particular book, we have a video. It's a 2.5-hour video where we go through the entire book. In the latter part of the book, there's a section called Accra Gwade, which is a soul-washing ceremony, where we talk about a shrine for the Accra, and we show, you know, we make, you know, references, like in the Yoruba tradition, it's called the Ibori Shrine and so forth. But we talk about the shrine for the Accra, the nature and function of the shrine, why it's important, a basic, you know, approach that we use to establish that, a basic simple approach dealing with that. So it's in that particular book. And then you can also send us an email if you have questions about that. But we have the book, and then we also have a video associated with the book.
All right, I appreciate that, bro.
Okay, no problem.
Merci.
Okay. So let me check the chat right quick. Okay. All right, now, okay, the question is, or the comment is, you said that law is love. Well, I wanted to ask, according to the chakra system, love is represented as a green frequency and represents life and growth. Is this true in our authentic practice as well, or do we not deal with the chakra system at all? Okay, that's a good question. So there are two articles directly related to that question. We have an article called Ankh, the Origin of the Term Yoga, on the website, free download, and then we have Kata Kasa, the Origin and Nature of the Chakra. Now, the term yoga or yonk in Proto-Indo-European, yonk or yunuk, comes from anak or ankh in ancient Kemet. So we show the etymology for that, and then we show the details about that and show what they're talking about. Yoga is totally different. It was just a basic corruption of different things. And then we show that the term kakra or karakara comes directly from ancient Kemet. Karakara means, which means circle or cylinder, anything round or circular, which is where kakra comes from, which means a wheel. And then later on they started presenting ideas of four chakras and seven and eight and different things, which is relatively recently. But we show the origin of where that comes from in ancient Kemet, and we talk about the, you know, the seven divinities up and down the spine and all this other stuff that you find in ancient Kemet that people have not published. Like you have people talk, for example, like Mwadashki's books and other individuals who've given misinformation talking about these terms of Sanskrit. Yoga is a Sanskrit term, and chakra is a Sanskrit term, which is totally false. So we prove the etymology of the terms. We show the origin of the term, and we show the differences between what the whites and their offspring were doing, which is really just gymnastics. In fact, 19th century gymnastics, the movements that you see comes from 19th century gymnastics when the British were over in India, and they were teaching them gymnastics and stretches and things like that, and the Hindus began to do that. Then we show in ancient Kemet where our people communicating with deities in front of the shrines, whether it's through libation, sitting, singing, dancing, whatever we were doing, ritual possession, but even times when we were sitting down in a specific posture in front of the shrine communicating with the divinity. The whites and offspring see us sitting down for long periods of time, and then they try to imitate the practice of sitting for long periods and saying that they're engaged in a spiritual discipline, but they're communicating with no divinities, no ancestral spirits at all. They don't have a kra, and so forth. So we go into all of that in those two articles. Different associations that they make, that Europeans make with seven chakras and the little seven scheme color, the color scheme that they have, they don't have an accurate foundation for that. They're speculating based on something they don't understand. So if you look just a couple thousand years ago when they first started talking or alluding to chakras in text, they weren't talking about seven. Some of them were talking about four. Some, they had different numbers. They started settling some of them on seven, some on other numbers later on. And the more you read their literature, the more you see them speculating and coming up with different things they don't really know. If you look at the Akradim Bosom, you look on our Akradim Bosom page on the website, the Abosom of the 7 days of the week, we have an article on each one. The solar, lunar, and planetary bodies that govern the seven-day week are also the same solar, lunar, and planetary bodies that govern the kara or karu, the seven kara or the karu in your body. So, and we show that. So when you look at that chart, and we're going to do a chart just to associate it to show the positions of the so-called chakras. But even if you just look at the chart the way it is, with the deities that govern each day of the week and the solar, lunar, and planetary body that govern each day of the week, and you look at the articles for each one. So we have an article on Awusi, who is Asar, article on Ajua, who is Aset, an article on Abena, who is Sekhmet, an article on Bena, who is Heru Behuded. We have an article on Awuku, which is Set, an article on Akua, which is Nebit-Het, article on Yao, Ya, and Abba, three different articles, which is Heru, son of Asar and Aset, Wachet and Nekabet, an article on Afi, which is Heru, and an article on Amen-Men. Those divinities that govern the 7 days of the week in our Khan culture and who give us our Kradin, like Kwabinan, Abina, and Kojo, and Ajua, and Kwesi, and Akosuya, and different names, Kweku, and Akua, and Yao, and Ya, and Abba, and Amen, and Kwame, and so forth. We show the in the articles the particular planetary body that governs them, the kind of energy that governs them, and the organs and organ systems that they're connected to as well. So you can find out from those different articles which ones are which. When they talk about, for example, where the heart system is, and they'll talk about the heart chakra, and they'll say that that region, the heart region, is where the love chakra is, Okay. So that's not accurate. The heart region is where Heru is, Yao, which is planet Jupiter. It's also Yah and Abba. So we'll show, for example, you have the king representing Heru sitting in the middle of Watchet and Nekhabet. Heru is in the center. He's the heart. Watchet and Nekhabet are connected to the right and left lung. So that heart-lung structure is Heru, Watchet, and Nekhabet. In our Akan culture, it's Yao, Yah, and Abba. In the Yoruba tradition, that's Shango, Oya, and Oba, the first wife of Shango. In Vodun, that is Hedioso, that is Abejida, and Ayaba. So there's a form of Heru called Heru Ami Abu, or Heru within heart. So when you read that article on Heru or Yao, you will understand why Jupiter, the great planet, is also connected to the heart. Heru is called, or Yao is called Akukoduru, which means heavy of chest, for someone who has heart, courage, bravery. Talking about bravery, having heart, having a heavy chest or a strong chest. Watchet, Nekhabet, or Yah and Abba are connected to the bronchial tubes in the lung complex. They give that vitality and energy to the heart. So the heart is also the drummer in the Akan tradition. Also, that's why Shango is the lord of the drum. Heru is the lord of the drum. Yao is the great divine drummer. The heart is the drummer inside of your body. That's why they also say that Shango, as well as Heru, as well as Yao, the divinity of thunder and lightning. Thunder, the thundering that you hear, is the thundering in your chest is like the thunder outside in the sky. The thundering, or the thunderer, is the drummer that's inside your heart, and the lightning and the winds and so forth is the wind inside your lungs that are connected to the heart. So the whole heart and lung complex is the thunder and lightning and wind and so forth in the body that gives you heart, that gives you power, that gives you vitality and so forth. It's not about falling in love and sensuality and, you know, all of that. So they misconstrue that because whites and their offspring simply associate the heart with, you know, for them it's really lust. Then they give a pseudo-spiritual meaning to love and try to disassociate it with lust. But what they're really talking about at the end of the day really is lust. That's one thing. If you look at the throat area, so-called throat chakra, that's where you'll find Awuku, for example, Kwekwanasi, the communicator, the divine trickster, and so forth. If you look at the so-called, what they call the Manipura chakra, Karakara, which is the solar plexus, that's where you'll find Benna and Abena and so forth, the fiery energy that protects divine immunity, divine hate, and so forth, lymphatic system, all of that. So every different system, you'll find we lay out the physiological system that's connected with the deity and also their spiritual function and creation and also the planetary body or the lunar or solar body that they're associated with. So you'll be able to see the actual connection. We're going to put a little chart out just to make it a quick reference. But if you read through those articles, then in fact, I'll put the link in the chat room right now. Akra Dean Bosom on the website. We also have videos on each one of the Akra Dean Bosom, the Yabosom that govern the 7 days of the week, the deities that govern the 7 days of the week. So we have an article on each one of them, and we also have a video where we examine the article on each one of them, and all of that is on the page, and all, of course, all of those are free downloads as well. So let me know if that answers the question. Okay. Let me see, we think we have a call. Michiamo. 1785, you have no comment?
Yes, I have a question. Well, I guess I would like to know about the, you were mentioning earlier the Akra dwelling in the head region, and each right. of us have it. I wanted to know the relationship to the Okra and the pineal gland.
Okay. Okay, so if you look at the Okra, you can look at it, the physiological seat of the Okra is the brain. So the cerebrum and the cerebellum, which the cerebrum has two hemispheres, the cerebellum has two hemispheres. That fourfold division is like the physical seat of the spiritual brain, which is the Okra. And just like encoded within your brain are all the programs that are necessary to run all of your physiological structures. Same thing with the Okra, that force that dwells in your head region that you can feel pulling you in one direction or the other, even if sometimes you don't follow it, and then you have problems when you don't follow it. Encoded within your Okra, within your soul, your consciousness, is your specific function and all the programs or blueprint of how you're to execute harmoniously in creation as you execute your function, how to carry out your function, but how not to get out of harmony with other created entities in creation while you're carrying out your function. The pineal gland is like the eye of the Okra. So just like in Kemet, the Okra is called the Ka. So it's Ka and Kemet, Kara and Akan. So it's the Ka in ancient Kemet. The pineal gland is the physical seat of what is called the Ak or the Aku in ancient Kemet. So that's like the eye of the cross. So just like your pineal gland is a light-sensitive gland, so sunlight as well as moonlight stimulates the pineal gland and then it secretes hormones to affect certain physiological processes, whether it's serotonin, melatonin, and so forth. It's light-sensitive. Spiritually, the spiritual energy that resonates in that region is also, of course, light sensitive. So you're able to, it's the divinities Tehuti and Seshat, the male and female divine scribes, the male and female forces of divine wisdom, that's that force of intuition. So within your brain, you have all the programs that your body needs to function. Within your Kra, you have all the programs of how you're supposed to function in the world. So as you're moving throughout the world and engaging your life on a regular basis, you may come into contact with a situation you've never encountered before. And your Okra, that force in your head, is pulling you to do a certain thing or pushing you away from doing another thing. So your Okra is pulling you, saying, no, you're not going to do this, you're going to do that. But then you want to know why. You want to know what's going on. What specifically is going on? Why can't I do this? Why would this put me out of harmony with order? What do I need to do to get within order? So when you're attuning to those specifics about why the Okra is functioning the way it's functioning, you're attuning to your Aku, which is like the spiritual pineal gland, and it gives you the specifics about how this situation related to your function in creation or how it's unrelated to your function in creation, and if you engage in it, what kind of negative responses you're going to have, and if you don't engage in it, why it's harmonious not to engage in it, and all those details. So to show you the relationship between what your function in the world is and the kind of behavior you may or may not engage in, so you can have a snapshot of, okay, why is this important? What is the value of this particular behavior? What's the value of this event, this activity? Why I should engage in it and why I shouldn't engage in it. So the Aku is like the eye of the Okra, just like your pineal gland is like the quote-unquote third eye, the inner eye. Spiritually, the eye of the Okra is the spiritual pineal gland. That's what the Aku is. Does that make sense?
I understand better now. I was trying to make the connection and how they work together, but if it's the eyes, like the connection between the spiritual realm, there's a counterpart on the etheric side or whatever you want to call it, the side that we can't see but it's there, the spiritual side. and the physical, and they relate, and that's how we talk to God, or our ancestors. That is the, like, the receiver or whatever. Do I have a right concept of it?
Yes, it's exactly like that. So just like you have a physical body, and then you have a smaller body within your physical body, which is your brain, which regulates all the activities in the body. You also have a spirit body. Like when somebody dies and their spirit separates from their body, and people who are clairvoyant can see the person's spirit walking around or moving around, you have a spirit body, and in the head region you have a spiritual force, a spirit force in the head region, which is the spirit's brain, and that's your kra, that's your soul, that's your divine consciousness. And just like you have a little pine-shaped little organ in your physical brain, which is the pineal gland that's light-sensitive, in the spiritual brain, you also have that little little spiritual organ in Kemetic called the Ak or the Aku. And every time you try to attune to intuitively what is the truth behind a specific thing, why should I do this and why shouldn't I do that, your Akra will pull you to do a certain thing and not to do another thing, and give you do this, do this, do this, don't do this, don't do that, don't do this. But then you ask the question, well, why is it important? Why shouldn't I do this? What's going to happen if I did this? You start trying to attune to the specifics of it. Your Aku, your spiritual pineal gland, is what will show you what's going on. So just like your spirit body animates your physical body until you make your transition, your Akra animates your brain. Your brain is pulsating because your Akra is the spiritual force that's animating it, that's taking up residence in your brain. Your brain is just a shrine for your Ka, and your pineal gland is just a shrine for your Aku. So every organ and organ system has a spiritual organ and organ system.
Okay. That would be the as above, so below type thing.
Right. That's where that concept comes from.
Okay. My phone is going, so I'm going to say, Nita Ache, I appreciate it. I got to sign off, so.
Okay, Yeni Ache. Yeni Ache da. Okay. I think we have one. Were you just listening? You still had your phone up, or you had another question? 8845?
I'm just listening, bro.
Just wanted to check. Okay. Okay, Michelle Wolf, 1613, you had a question or a comment?
Michelle Wolf, this is Ia Ajua.
Heads up.
Yes, my question is, in dealing with our family that is still in transition, of which I'm in debt, I'm still in transition in terms of comprehending fully my connection to my ancestors. And in talking about the divine hate, and a lot of us still believe in this concept of Satan, what would be an appropriate response to help our families understand divine hate in reference to Satan? Because I could see now that, you know, in having that conversation, that, you know, folks will associate that with dealing with this entity that doesn't exist, but that has been forced down our throat forever in terms of this concept of Satan. So how could we help our family to understand the concept of divine heat minus Satan?
What, you said divine hate minus? I didn't hear the last part.
Satan. Without associating with Satan.
Okay, well, now it's two things. On one hand, with regard to just the hate itself, all of our people hate the crackers anyway. They do. They can pretend like they don't, but they know. And if you just ask them, like, look, I know you hate the crackers. I know you're trying to suppress it and all this other stuff. You do not love these people, and you don't. Like, you can ask them, do you like child molestation, or do you hate child molestation? You like rape, or you hate rape? You like murder? You hate... They were like, oh, no, I love child molestation. They're not going to say that. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So, like, okay, so hate is in your heart, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, so you're lying to yourself right now. But then the quickest way is two things. One, you show them that your immune system repels disorder for the purpose of maintaining the integrity of your system. Your immune system is the vehicle of hate or rejection in your body. You reject so that you can sustain what was created. So your immune system hates cancerous cells. You ask them, hey, would you like the little cancerous cells in your body now to overtake you and kill you? Or do you want your immune system to kill them? Or do you want your immune system to say, well, I love you, and you, even though you're a cancerous cell, we're all body cells and we're all part of the same body, so we should all get along and I'm going to let you do your thing. They're not going to do that.
Right.
They're going to say, we want the cancer cells to be killed. And that's a structure that was created by the Supreme Being for that purpose. So if you are related to the immune system and cancer cells, because literally that's what the vehicle of hate is, the immune and lymphatic system together. So we can use an umbrella term to say the immune system. Your immunity repels disorder for the purpose of maintaining the integrity of your system, your organism. And just like there's an immune system in your body, there's an immune system in creation. So that force is generated within you to repel child molestation or repel rape or repel murder. That's that divine repulsion is divine hate. That's the first thing. They can't deny that because they feel it and they experience it and they know it's true.
Okay.
Now, the only thing is, you show, so like, that force that you're experiencing, that's divine hate. Now, there's a difference between love and lust. And you show them that love and law is the same word, so to be in love is to be in law with somebody, meaning you're in harmony with divine order with them. Lust is, you know, a perverse desire. Most of our people say, okay, there's a difference between love and lust, even if they don't know what love really is. They know it's a difference between love and lust. And we're like, well, our culture is about embracing love or law, but we don't embrace lust, because that's a perversion of love. Then you also say, but there's also hate and malice. Our culture is embracing divine hate, meaning we reject disorder so we can maintain divine order. Malice is the perversion of hate. Malice just means evil intent. Maliciousness is what causes people to rape somebody. Malice is what causes somebody to engage in pedophilia. Malice is what engages somebody to, you know, inspire somebody to engage in theft and everything else. So when you have somebody who's malicious, who just wants to engage in criminality and disorder, hate comes along to stamp them out, to kill them, to maintain order. So hate maintains order. Your immune system maintains order. It doesn't create disorder in your body. Disorder is what is evil. Hate maintains order. It doesn't maintain disorder. It maintains order. Malice is what creates evil, so hate stomps out malice. Just like you embrace law and hate, but you reject lust and malice. So that's the difference. The white and offering want us to believe that lust and love is the same thing and malice and hate is the same thing, and it's not. So they understand that love and lust are two different things, but now they need to understand hate and malice are two different things. Hate rejects disorder. Malice promotes disorder. And conceptually, they know there's a difference between hating child molestation and just hating your cousin because they made you mad and you say, I hate you, I wish you died or something. You know, they know the difference between that. They know the difference between something malicious and something, you know, hating for a good reason, like hating child molestation. That same force that makes them repel child molesters is the same force of divine hate that they're trying to deny. Now, with regards to Satan, we can just simply tell them the truth that Satan is a fictional character. We can show the deity set where they got that from and how they corrupted that whole thing. So you can give them, you know, a free book, the Cuckoo Tune Tune, and they can listen to the video and audio, and they can be shown, like, if you want some detailed information about how Satan is a fictional character and Jesus is a fictional character, here's information that's detailed that you can study on your own.
Yeah.
But, they need to hear from somebody that, even if it's just in a sentence, Jesus never existed, Muhammad never existed, Allah, Yahweh, Satan, all these characters are fictional. Our culture has the real deities that white people corrupted these fictional characters from. Now, if you want to learn something about it, you can learn something about it. But, you know, they do need to be, they can be introduced. Now, if they initially try to reject it, they might. But at some point, they'll try to sneak around and look, even just if they think they're going to try to prove you wrong.
Right.
People who have got the information just because they wanted to say, I'm going to prove him wrong, or watch this.
Right.
And then they ended up believing Christianity, Islam, and Judaism because they got the information.
Okay. That was helpful.
Okay. And I'll say that. Appreciate your support.
Sure.
Okay. Hit that. Okay. So I think there was just one more question. Question is, was Akhenaten and the Kemetic text that talks about one God, Atan or Amen, authentic or later perversions by invaders and traitors? The text talking about the Aten, and there's also Atenit, which is the female son. The texts are authentic, but absolutely none of the texts promote monotheism at all. There's not one text anywhere in Kemet, including every text associated with Akhenaten, none of them promote monotheism. The whites and their offspring try to read monotheism into it because they want to promote monotheism. And then you have Negroes, like in the Nation of Islam, talking about, you know, we were teaching the one God in the 18th dynasty, and then you have Negroes trying to run with that and talk about a bloodline of Israel, which is pure idiocy, pure nonsense, totally inaccurate. But anybody who actually sits down and reads the text, you can read the English translation or you can look at the, you know, Medutu and get a book about learning how to read the Medutu and study the text on your own. But it's not a monotheistic text. He talks about Shu. He talks about the Aten. He talks about Ra. He talks about Hapi. He talks about other divinities in the text. So it's not monotheistic. He had a focus on the divinity, the Aten, and doing a whole lot of ritual associated with the Aten, but he didn't deny that there were other divinities in existence. And nobody would deny that because that's foolishness. No black person ever came up with monotheism because that's idiotic. We actually deal with the deity. We get possessed by the divinity. We communicate with the deity. The whites and their offspring are not capable of that, so they try to push the notion of monotheism, not because they believe it's true. They know it's not accurate. But they had to politically structure that system and then, of course, make themselves, they have to create only one deity, say no other deities existed, and then, of course, make themselves a representative of that one deity and then make the deity white or make the deity invisible. So the reason they did that, of course, was they had to remove all the other divinities because they don't want us worshiping deities, because you can't control the people that you've invaded, whose country you have invaded, and then you try to control them, and all they have to do is go inside their house, and there's a little piece of wood, a little statue they pour libation to, and the spirit takes up residence in the little statue and tells them to kill the cracker who invaded the country. White people cannot control that kind of thing. So the only way they can control it, they can't make the deities run away. They have to make you believe that you're not supposed to listen to any divinities or any ancestresses and ancestors. They can't stop the deities from communicating with us. They can't stop the ancestresses and ancestors communicating with us. only thing they can possibly do that they figured out over thousands of years is hopefully make us not listen to the Abosom, not listen to the Insumafo, and teach us, and some of the brainwashed amongst us, that if you hear anything that's coming from a deity or a spirit, that's really just the devil, so don't listen to it. So therefore, even though the forces of nature are communicating with us and the spirits are communicating, ancestral spirits will say, I hear it, but that's just the devil, and I'm not listening, I'm not going to obey. So you have people in churches right now, they hear that their ancestors and ancestors all the time, but they see them, but then they start begging the white fictional character to help them not listen to their spirits, or they go to a therapist and get medication because they're being told that they're insane, schizophrenic, and so forth. They're saying demonic spirits, and in reality, these are their own relatives trying to communicate with them. So the cracker understood they couldn't control us, couldn't control the forces of nature, so they just wanted to control us by saying, don't listen to them. But Akhenaten never taught monotheism. No black person who had any sense ever taught that. That's a creation of the inferior mind of the Caucasian, because it's a means of control. It's a political ploy to get our people to come up under one system, reject all of their actual deities in creation, embrace a fake deity, and embrace the representatives of that fake deity on earth, which is the whites and their offspring. Okay, so let me know if that answers the question. And all right, so I think that's all the calls that we had. Okay, again, we will be on next week. Okay, and after that, we'll be on next week. I'm sorry, we'll be on tomorrow. Egwa Marketplace, Kamama Casey Tahuti, publisher of African World Analysis, as well as How to Make a Negro Christian. Also, the host of Africa's Reattention on Blog Talk Radio. He will be on tomorrow for 2 hours in our Egwa Marketplace show. Again, we will be speaking in Camp Springs, Maryland, this Akwesi Adar this Sunday, which is also Akwesi Adar, June 22nd at 12 p.m. Check the website for that information, odirafo.com, O-D-W-I-R-A-F-O-F as in free, O.com, O-D-W-I-R-A-F-O.com for that presentation. Also, for the soft cover versions of our publications, we have 7 that are available right now. We will be adding some more soon. Afuraka Afuraka, The Origin of the Term Africa, Modern Echi, which is the book we spoke about today. Nkwamuwa Whole Life Journal, Kukutumsum, The Ancestral Jurisdiction, where we talk about the fictional characters like Jesus and Moses and Muhammad and Buddha and all these, Allah and all these, Yahweh and these various characters that don't exist, as well as our cosmology. Uben Shang, which talks about ritual practice like shrines and ancestral possession, deity possession, ancestral communication, idols, talismans, amulets, divination, these various things. We also have Obedima, Afrakani Manhood, Okra, Okra Complex, The Soul of Akanfo. So we have these various texts. You can go to our website, ojirafo.com, the Unhoma section. You can order those publications. They only range between $8 and $11. PDF versions or ebook versions of these texts are all free, so you can download those for free. But if you would like the soft cover version, or if you would just like to support our work, you can either purchase the soft cover version on the website. We ship it out to you, of course. You can also make a donation on the website if you've downloaded the ebook versions, the free ebook versions. You can make a donation there, or you can purchase the soft cover versions as well. And that's what we, you know, use to assist us in giving out the free hard soft cover publications when we do presentations, as well as all of our presentations are free. In every city that we go to, we never charge an admissions fee. And, of course, we do give away at least one free book, one of the titles out. And when we do our workshops, training, Hot Day Bisa, divination, different things, everything, these things we do not charge for. So the way we generate revenue is through the publication of the soft cover versions of our text. So if you like to purchase those, we say, Yerase, we thank you. And we will see you tomorrow for Egwa Marketplace. Yerase for everybody who came through and people who are on the call. And, again, share this information. with your contact list. The archives for this show and all of our previous shows are on our Blog Talk page, OG.fo. So, Yerase, we thank you, and we will see you tomorrow. Yebeshia. It's us.